confident we will be looking at other issues raised here today, raised by the agency, because there's some issues we also want to discuss with the international commissioner, because it wasn't here yesterday in terms of issues raised in the agency report, ours is that important. So I will first just then give an opportunity for members to introduce themselves, then we'll give General Timbot to introduce the presentation. And then we will go straight to the briefing from the Western Cape.
Melambagaitso lena la ka tsena enji mo lewatsi ke le lokola komiti e ka lo leboga.
Good morning, my name is Lennon Ramatakane, member of the committee.
Morning, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Phindile Mola, a member of the portfolio committee. I thank you.
Good morning, my name is Philip Mjong, a member of the committee.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, Sanwenani. I'm Zakhele Mbele, member of the committee.
Hello, I'm Diane Kerr-Barnard, also member of the committee.
Goeiemôre, ek is Pieter Groenewald en ek is 'n lid van die komitee.
Thank you very much, General Motiba. Your team, please. Thank you.
Thanks, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. Honourable Chairperson, our team consists of those that were here yesterday, General Cruiser, General Zulu, General Ravi, Brigadier Naika, Colonel Mate, Colonel Stay. The new team joining us today is the Provincial Commissioner General Jula, Colonel Ralia Venga, Lieutenant General Mawela, he was also here yesterday, General Makato. From DPCI, Lieutenant General Matakata, General Masemula is also with us, Honourable Chairperson, and we request after this session if he can be excused to join the Minister together with the PC. There is an inviso in Philippi. General Ramazwili from the Detectives, General Sitole from PSS, Management Intervention, Lieutenant General Magadlela, Forensic, Acting Divisional Commissioner General Ngoka, Major General Ngobo, Acting Divisional Commissioner for Crime Intelligence, Major General Dada from Presidential Protection Service, Brigadier Machona from Internal Audit, and the DPCI also brought Brigadier Mlaudzi, Brigadier Matthews, and Captain Sona Nosi. And if I can start, Honourable Chairperson, by apologising for my absence yesterday. I really apologise that I could not get an earlier flight from Beijing, and I hope the committee will accept my apology in taking this committee very much seriously. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Honourable Mamula.
Thank you, Chairperson. But others we don't know. Can they raise their hands, because we don't know others. Others we know them. That's
the only thing. Yeah, maybe if we go to the different programs, let's do them that. Yeah, maybe with regard, maybe about the absence, we'll deal with that when we finish with the Western Cape, because it's an important issue, we must deal with it. I think, General Motiba, if we can go then to the briefing on Philippi East. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Honourable Chairperson. The Provincial Commissioner is here, General Jula, and if the Chairperson please afford him opportunity to brief the committee.
Thank you, General Motiba. General Jula, you're welcome to go in.
Thank you so much, Honourable Chairperson, all the Honourable Members. My presentation will cover the following aspects. The station profile of Philippi East, the human resources and physical resources allocated to that station, a very brief crime overview, and then I will go into the specific murders and the attempted murders that occurred in the past 2 to 3 weeks in that policing precinct, and I will also look into key policing actions that had been implemented in that station even prior to the murders that occurred, and then what we have put in place since these murders have happened in terms of the provincial interventions and our operational plans. And also, I also want to look into the challenges and then come to the way forward.
We will arrange with the secretariat that Mr. Lobby, I've got a copy here, so we can just, thank you.
Thank you so much, Honorable Chair. The population of Philippi East is 61,773 people, and the size of the area is 6 square kilometers. The unemployment rate is estimated at 80%. There's a total of 7 schools, and we have 3 sectors. The liquor outlets, which is one of the generators of crime in that area, we have the legal liquor outlets as 22, the illegal liquor outlets as 153, and the legal liquor outlets will always fluctuate according to the policing interventions that we are putting in place in that area. And there are issues of illicit drug outlets as well, which is a total of 7. The history of Marikana. Marikana informal settlement was established in the late of September 2014 due to an illegal land invasion. This took place on the property of Power Construction. People migrated from various areas like Better Life informal settlement, Marcus Garvey, and Acacia informal settlements. So Marikana informal settlement has been growing ever since its existence. This is just the layout of the particular area. As you can see there, that you have the lower crossroads, and then on the other side, it is the Marikana informal settlement itself. All those areas form part of the Philippi East policing precinct. The human resources allocated to Philippi East are as follows. There is a total of 145, 139 members that are at that station. The granted is 145. So that will give us a shortage of just 6 members. So the Marikana police station is capacitated to 96%. And the areas or departments where there are shortages will be Vispon, where there's a shortage of 3 members, and also detectives, where there's also a shortage of 3 members. The vehicle resources, there is a total of 36 vehicles that are at that station. The granted is 37, so it gives us a shortage of only 1 vehicle in that station. Crimes that are most prevalent in the policing precinct include the street robberies, where the victims are approached by the people that will be robbing them, approaching them on foot, and also the carjackings. Here, the victims are also approached on foot in the streets, in the intersections, and the driveways. Also, the house robberies, where the various informal settlements or the shacks are approached on foot as well, and people knock on the door, and sometimes they walk through open doors. There are also business robberies. Also, this is done on foot, where the would-be robbers will be posing as customers. The possible targets or identified victims in the crimes that are prevalent there are people that are walking alone. Also targeted randomly are people who stops at the streets and intersections and the driveways, and then they are hijacked. And also people that are affected are the residents and the foreign nationals. In terms of the business robberies, it is at the malls and the shops and the other businesses. Coming to the breakdown of the murders that have occurred in that area. These murders started mainly, this spike started on the 12th of September. During this incident, at about 10 past 12 midnight, 3 persons were found to have been burnt to death. We have then subsequently arrested 3 suspects for the 3 murders of the people in an incident which appeared to be vigilante related. Then on the 25th of September at 11:30 at night, we had another incident where a deceased was forcefully taken from his home in Marikana by a group of people who were wearing balaclavas. The body was found in Symphony Way in Marikana with stab wounds. So this was another vigilante attack. Then on the 26th of September, at about 10 to 11 at night, a deceased was forcefully taken, the deceased, in fact two of them, were forcefully taken from their homes in Lower Crossroads by a group of unknown people. One person died on the scene, and one person died in Grooteskier Hospital, and a third person remains in a serious condition, in fact. And then again on the 27th, at about 12:30 midnight, we had another two incidents where two people were dragged from their homes by an unknown group of people. They were assaulted and both persons died on the scene. There's another incident which is not going to appear on the presentation, where a person was found. It happened on the 27th as well, where a person was found dead with multiple wounds in the street. Then another incident on the 27th as well, is where one person was found dead with multiple wounds in Symphony Way. And on that one as well, currently the suspects are unknown. So this accounts for the first set or group of the vigilante attacks, which are counted to be at 7. And then after that, on the 29th, came other incidents of 11 murders. In these 11 murders, they happened as follows. In crime scene number one, there were four people were sitting at the shebeen, and others were playing pool. Unknown suspects just came into this liquor outlet, and they shot and killed four persons. In the second scene, which was not very far from the first one, unknown males were sitting in the shack drinking when they were also attacked. Suspects are unknown, and on this one, four persons were killed. In the third crime scene, one male who was wearing a security guard uniform was going to work, and he was attacked between the shacks, and he died. In the next incident, this is crime scene number four. One male was attacked in between the shacks as well, and the suspects are unknown. Then a further male, who seems to have been picked up by an Avanza, which is operating at a taxi there, seems to have been picked up after he had been attacked as well, and he was taken to hospital, and he died in Mitchell's Bay Hospital. There were also three, other than these 11 murders, there were also three attempted murder cases. With these attempted murder cases, victims were shot in the thighs, in the mouth, and arms, and are currently being treated in Mitchell's Plain and Grooteskier hospitals. Specialized capacities have been activated, including organized crime and the special task force. We have so far been able to detain three suspects, but I think by this morning, by today, we are going to confirm one as directly linked so far to these incidents. There had been quite a number of operations that had been going on in this area, and we can count 252 operations which are entrapments, 15 of them, starting just from the 1st of April till the 30th of September. There had been searches at illegal liquor outlets as well. 1,102 of those had been conducted in the illegal liquor outlets that are in that area. There has been searches at legal liquor outlets, 745 of them. There were also cluster operations. In May alone, two cluster operations were conducted that were focused in Marikana itself. In July, seven such operations. In August, one. and in September 1. The total number of arrests that were made just for the first semester is a total of 294 arrests that range from common robberies and a number of other serious offences. But what I just want to highlight, it's a breakthrough on the business robberies that happened at the Maragana business complex, where 7 arrests were made. From April 2017 till the 28th of September, we have made a total of 18 illegal firearms arrests in just Maragana alone. Now, coming to the interventions that we are putting in place, we have put in place, we have assembled a total of 207 members that are going to be focusing on a geographical and a targeted approach in Maragana informal settlement itself. And we have zoned the informal settlement. We are going to be focusing on specific hotspots in specific zones, and there's going to be flexi our deployments and specific key actions that we are going to be executing. We are going to be targeting specific individuals who are the wanted. Also, we will be focusing on the warrants of arrest that needs to be executed, the fingerprint linked suspects, forensic leads, and the known and identified suspects. We are going to be conducting intelligence-driven operations and tracing operations. And we are also going to be conducting the profiling of the suspects. And we are going to be having a main focus on the proliferation of firearms in that particular area, and also the drugs. And there's going to be daily monitoring, which is going to be ensured. The challenges that we have regarding the particular area, it is that Maragana is as an informal settlement with illegal structures. Those structures were erected such that it becomes difficult for the police to access particular areas of the same informal settlement. If you really look at that informal settlement, there is only one road, a formal road, that separates the lower crossroad and Maragana. You have to go along that road in a particular direction. If you can't go towards that particular direction, there is only one other dead road, which is difficult to travel on, which cuts the informal settlement into two different parts. And that is all that it is. Other than that, you can only access that area by parking a vehicle at a particular spot, and then you need to walk into the informal settlements, these shacks that are so congested. So that is one challenge, the lack of the infrastructure. Secondly, there is no lighting. Those that do have electricity in that area have illegally connected it to the formal houses that are close by. The water points are erected for use. It is done by the dwellers themselves. There are communal toilets, and you have to walk quite a distance to go to the toilets. So vehicle patrols are not possible at all. You can only access that particular area by foot, which means that as they will be able, as we approach the area, to know that there is a vehicle that is approaching, a vehicle must be parked at a particular spot. Now, during the night, it is so dark, you will have to provide a guard or guards for the vehicle that is going to be left at a particular point. And the members that are going to move into the informal settlement itself must be so vigilant and so alert that they should be like looking around themselves all the time, going through the darkness into a particular area where a crime or where there is any policing that has to take place. What I'm trying to suggest is that it is an area that cannot be policed through normal policing. It is an area that can be policed only through the operations where you have a strength in the numbers, so that even the lives of the members are not put at stake. So other than that, there is going to be operations which the minister has announced, and with the assistance of the acting national commissioner, there is going to be a lot of resources that are going to be placed in that area.
and beyond when this dust has settled as well, and when we've also received more students that are going to be passing out of the college next year, I've decided that I'm going to be adding another 40 members in that particular station that are going to be part of the establishment of that station. What we also hope to do is to strengthen the CPF partnerships and the community structures, and we will also keep on engaging the City of Cape Town and the municipality in an effort to address issues that are related to the infrastructure and mainly the lighting. If we could at least get the lighting functioning there, it will go a long way towards making our job a bit easier. Briefly, that is the presentation that I have, Honorable Chair. Thank you so much.
Thank you, General Judah, for that presentation. Members, we will go to questions. The first two from my side, and then I'll go in the line. When we, this morning, while we were coming to this meeting, there was a phone in on SAFM on this issue. And unfortunately, SAPS National wasn't presented because apparently the spokesperson was on a plane or something. So they had the community leader, the MEC, and a researcher. Now, the community leader said, and I maybe want to get the comments of SAPS, that apparently the violence is fueled by young gangs, mainly, who's got, you know, vast quantities of illegal firearms. So I want to know, from the illegal firearms perspective, are we going to get a DPCR involved, the new illegal firearm unit, to assist there in dealing with the issue? The second issue is urban design, because in terms of urban design, that community is a reshout for disaster in terms of crime going forward. I mean, there's no way you're going to be effective in dealing with crime with no streetlights, with no roads. And so what efforts are being undertaken within the cluster? That's also a question to National to address this issue, because clearly the provincial government, COCTA, human settlements must be part of the solution. SAPS can bring solutions in terms of the crime combating, of course, and we must strengthen that, and members will also deal with that. But the real issue here is urban design, and that's a holistic approach, and it's also beyond the cluster. So what's being done, and I want to get a sense, because Acting National Commissioner, that's an issue that can be discussed with your colleagues, DGs, at national level. Can we maybe get a response? Honourable Mulabatsi.
Thank you, Chairperson. Your crime intelligence was again found wanting. Why must experienced police, with well-resourced, why must they only jump after people have died? My second one, you speak of illegal liquor outlets. There are 153 and there are more than legal ones. Why don't you squash them? Why do they exist when you even know them? Why don't you just squash them? My next one is, you spoke of people who are vulnerable are people who stop at the intersection where they are supposed to stop, obviously, according to law. What are we saying here? Must people ignore the law and just go past intersections, or what are we saying here? My next one, according to your preliminary investigation, what sparked this vigilante killings? My last one.
Honorable Mulabatsi, let's keep it, you know, I stick to two.
Sorry, Chair.
Honorable.
I also want to ask a question.
I know. Honorable Ramatakani.
No, Chair, sorry, you didn't explain, you said three questions.
Chair,
quickly, and thanks to the PC for the report. I want to separate the issues. There are issues that the city is
of Cape Town has to deal with, which is the issue around environmental design, intergovernmental relationship, that I will separate for now. But I just want to ask this three questions. The cluster. What has been the role of the cluster, the Philippines cluster, the Nyanga cluster, in relation to what is known to being a daily occurrence in Marikana? Has there been a program, has there been a plan to neutralize this before it went to this point? So that's the first question around the cluster. Is the cluster doing what it's supposed to do? I've heard the minister saying, I'm sending another troops from Pretoria. Has all other options, cluster options, been exhausted to deal with this and to neutralize this? Is there capacity? Has there been a plan for the cluster in terms of trying to neutralize that particular, particularly in the Nyanga area? It's a problem area, it's well known. The second question, PC, the what is happening there, it's just simply a tip of an iceberg in terms of what is happening in the province. So the question I want to ask is this. You should have had a profile long before this. What is the profile of this tenant? Who are these? Because certainly there are people are saying they are leaders, non-leaders, which the police are also known. And the police are a bit reluctant. I don't want to say they are scared because they are fairly armed. A bit reluctant to bounce on them. Why is that the problem? The last question is, this is, with a problem that you're experiencing, the plan I see is a realistic plan. There's nothing that is going to shock that community, particularly the gangs, small gangs in particular in it. It's not going to make any dent. It's going to be reactive. So I heard about a call for the army to come because there is a war going here, the province calling for that. So the question I'm asking a general, acting general as general, is there no other actual serious, I don't want to say lockdown plan. I want to ask that. Is there nothing extraordinary that can give relief to that community in a form of a simply close down and search that particular area and shut down the illegal civil? Here we're tinkering. We're not sending any serious message. Now I'm just asking that question, what is it that can be done?
Thank you, Honorable Nkani, Honorable Mabula.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, General, for your presentation. It is really difficult to work in Marikana because I was asking myself that what are there any patrols at night? But now when you are saying it's only one street and no lights, it's very difficult for them to work, Chairperson. My question is, on business robberies, shops and malls, are there any patrol police vehicles that are patrolling on the malls or police foot patrols? Are there any cameras? Because it can be robberies each and every day. This symphony, is it Symphony Street or what? Symphony Ways, it looks as if it's a busy street or what? Are there any patrols? Because I don't know, all the murderers and everything, it happens there. What are you doing about that? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Mula. Honorable Tongu.
Well, thanks, Chairperson. Chairperson, I must be very honest. It's very clear that in the first place, the geographical nature of or the geographic design of the place is quite unsuitable for a first line of defense of our country to operate in a manner that will be effective. Because police are not necessarily military. However, due to, when I was listening, I came a bit late because I was delayed by the talk show that you referred to earlier. The researcher there is pointing out at issues that came up sharply yesterday. And the researcher is based here in the Western Cape of management, police management. And the researcher is indicating or touching on an issue which I hope, Chairperson, the email that I forwarded to you about KZN that you never read, once you read, it will begin to reflect.
How do you know?
Just read it this morning. I'll read it. Don't worry.
Which it will reflect, because the researcher is saying, good police officers are either redeployed outside. Good police officers who enjoy confidence of the people, immediately they enjoy confidence of the people, are redeployed outside of the area. And he says, then bad police officers are then taken back. This is a researcher saying, not me. And then he talks of this and touches even on promotion of police, that as long as these things are not arrested, then we are going to have problems in that particular area. Now, you know, yesterday I was talking, Chairperson, to one member of, honorable member of the committee. I said, you know, it's like war, because these people, 11 or so people, were killed. These assassins, we are told, when I read from Durban, Kinshasa International Airport, they first killed a group of people on one spot and moved to another spot and moved to another spot and moved to another spot. Then I was saying to this member, it is unlikely that any member of the community could not call the nearest police station to say, there are these people who are going amok here. In terms of the report that we are getting, Bravo, Alpha, whatever, the response is within such a time, such a time. In that conversation, people are saying, for police to respond, it will take more than an hour. The community member residing in that place, who is also involved in that talk show of Sakina. Then I ask myself, are we given correct information by police management in terms of response times? Then I must be honest, Chairperson. To me, these questions came very sharply to say, we will forever put burden on national police intervention, which then does work, as it did in KZN, with regard to Cleveland. Immediately when they pull out, the same continues as you have heard even that this morning, that another leader has been gunned down in the same region of Sindisamagaka. These questions then tell me, are we a country at war? Because before 1994, there were similar reasons. No, we can't be everywhere at the same time and all that. And people were killed like flies. So these are the things, Chairperson, that I think we need that found resonance to me to say all is not well, because crime intelligence and even proactive policing, even only if those people were killing people in that fashion, moving from point A to the last point, certainly. It tells me of one thing, that even only if cash has in transit are forged in KZN the way it has been, and there, people firing, not just firing in the air, killing people, it would take almost more than 30 minutes for them to execute that, and then they went scot-free and investigations would follow. Something is seriously wrong in the policy of the local and also at a cluster level. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable Bailey.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to General Jula for the report. In terms of my first question, I hear the feedback that the station only has a 6-member shortage. But I think that if you were to ask the residents in that station precinct, and it certainly would be my educated guess, is that the station is severely understaffed and there isn't enough capacity to deal with the actual situation on the ground as it exists, as opposed to making technocratic comparisons between an artificial baseline, the fixed establishments, and therefore the actual we have, which shows a small gap, as opposed to what the crime situation in the area actually needs as an operational response and the capacity behind that. So my first simple question, Chair, is what does the theoretical human resource requirements, the THRR, actually say would be needed in terms of policing capacity in that precinct, given the population, given the crime trends and crime profiles, especially around trio crimes and murders? Or as maybe as a version of that question, what would the RAG have said, assuming that the RAG and the THRR aren't quite related? Because that is what residents would be crying about when they say that there aren't enough police, there aren't enough vehicles, is they'd be saying we don't have enough for what is needed to address and to resolve that crime situation. And then my second question linked to that is just to get clarity on the 40 additional constables who are going to be allocated to the station in December this year. Are those going to be all new officers who will have graduated from the SAPS academies? Or will some of those be redeployments from other stations? If some will be redeployments, what percentage of that 40 are going to be redeployments and from which stations? Because I have a fear it's going to be a repeat of this theme of robbing Peter to pay Paul, and we just displace the problem as opposed to not addressing it fundamentally.
Thank you, Honourable Bailey. Honourable Coda Barnard.
Thank you, Chair. Now, reference was made a number of times to vigilante attacks. Now, in my mind, that would typically be residents taking on the job of the police because they believe the police will do nothing and will do nothing, and they declare individuals to be guilty of a crime and then they execute them. That's my personal definition of vigilantism. Are we talking vigilantism or gang warfare? Men in balaclavas, I don't know. It doesn't sound like a vigilante issue to me. So I'd like to know where that comes from. Certainly I agree. We know, for example, from the Khayelitsha Commission, with references to shortages at stations, I agree absolutely. You stated that Marikana, the settlement, has grown and grown and grown. But the station contingent, of course, hasn't. short-sighted in the extreme by upper management. And Honourable Mbele went into it, but I do question this issue of the 40 new graduates. I believed that what you were saying is that they would be used as force multipliers in Marikana, but putting brand new police into what you previously described as an extremely dangerous area would simply be providing target practice for these criminals. So please just fill us in there on what you intend to do with them. And secondly, you referred to the station operations. I agree absolutely. It's no good telling us there were 1,000 visits and raids to illegal liquor outlets and not one reference to shutting them down. So please tell me that was included in the operations. If it wasn't, it is a total waste of your time and ours. What you've got and had up on the screen look to me to be standard police work. I don't see anything new. Have you, for example, undertaken lifestyle audits of all the police at the station to ensure that none of them are in any way linked to illegal activities? Because these claims are made over and over and over again, indeed by an ex-GAM member on television this morning, that the police are inevitably involved, and that's why you don't see the major successes. Meaning the top arrests. Now, you refer to intelligence-driven operations. That phrase was used yesterday. We all know of the chaos that is crime intelligence. The police I speak to around the country just say, please don't refer to crime intelligence. Basically, it doesn't exist in our area. And yet you're saying it's intelligence-driven. If it was intelligence-driven, you would be arresting the known drug lords, because all crime around South Africa involves substance abuse of some sort or other, picking up teenagers selling something on the corner of the street may give you the numbers, but is an absolute and utter waste of your time, gives them a criminal record, and the drug lords laugh all the way to the bank. Please answer.
Thank you, Honourable Carlo Barat. Honourable Groenewald.
Thank you, Chair. As I said, I don't think what question I should ask, but no, something is wrong here, Chairperson. The area we're talking about is 6 square kilometers. We're talking of a relative small area, say about 2.5 by 2.5 kilometers. That's the area. It's not a big area compared to other areas and such. All the questions asked should be answered, but it confirms what the community is saying, that the police are involved themselves. And secondly, they are afraid to go into that area. And I do believe them now. Because if you look the size of the area and the resources available, I hear about the constructions and the layout and all that sort of thing. It's true. But that tells me that if you cannot go with a vehicle into a specific part of the area, then you don't go in there. It's as simple as that. So, I believe the community when they say the police are involved, and the question has been asked numerous times now. Why do you have, in such a small area, you've got 153 illegal outlets, but they're still operating? It just doesn't make sense.
Thank you, members. Let's go then to General Motiba and the team from SAPS. Thank you.
Thanks, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. The first question from the Honourable Chairperson on SAFM community leader saying that the incidents there are fueled by games and whether DPCI is involved, I will ask through you, General Chairperson, that General Jula respond to that.
General Jula. Can I get that question additional?
Yeah, maybe I can just rephrase it.
There was two parts to it. The one was that the community leader said on SAFM that the origin of the violence there, it's young men in gangs organized with illegal guns. That is really fueling this whole thing. So I said, well, from what is your analysis? Is it the same? And the issue with regarding to DPCI was, if there is a prevalence of illegal guns, are you involving the newly established unit from the DPCI focusing on illegal guns, if it's a priority? That's the two questions.
Thank you so much, Chair. Yes, we are involving the newly established section of the DPCI in looking at the proliferation of firearms in particular areas, including this particular Marikana. Secondly, the other question can be linked with the question which has been raised with Honorable Ramatagane. The question of the profile of that particular area and the question of the known leaders. Yes, we have become aware of who the leaders in these criminal activities are. And for an example, some of us or somewhere there will be talk about, or let me say that at least one of the leaders who was a twin that has been operating in that area is in prison. But there's a lot others that have yet to be brought in for questioning. And in terms of the targeted approach, which is going to also have an element of the intelligence-driven part of it, we are going to be assisted by crime intelligence in finding out where exactly are these criminal groupings hiding. This is going to help us in terms of when we are executing our operations to make sure that we don't go around looking and only sort of scare them off from one area to another. That it becomes a targeted approach that we're able to surround them and arrest them. So that is what the intelligence-driven part of our operations is going to be. And we said we are going to be executing a targeted approach. We have started already conducting the suspect raids, also looking for the known suspects in that area. We are cleaning up that area in terms of arresting anyone who could have been involved in whatever form of crime that could have been committed in that particular area. So that is what we have started doing already. And then there were other questions raised by Honorable Molebati, where she also felt that...
Honorable Chairperson, can I just, General Zula, let's take them by vote.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Can I proceed to
the... Yes, General. Mufiba, yes. Let's keep the follow-ups. Let's just first do the first round.
My mom is...
Honorable Chairperson, the next question on the role of urban design. We do talk in the cluster, but the plans that the cluster is having is a very, very long-term plan, which goes beyond 2030. Honorable Chairperson, the situation in Marikana is not only restricted to Marikana. If a person goes to all the townships and the cities, this type of situation is spread all over, whether you are in Alexandra, in the Stratler area, or you go to Umlazi in terms of the Cleveland and so forth. The situation is the same, and the fact that people have invaded the land and the local municipality just let them there, the services that are being rendered there are not up to standard. Fortunately, I commanded the police station, Alexandra, which almost looks like Marikana, where our main challenge was, when you are called, there are no street names, there are no street numbers. When the police are supposed to react, you arrive there, the person would say, no, when you arrive at this corner, and then you blast a siren, and you wake up other people in the process. It is quite a very, very difficult situation, Honorable Person, and you don't know who's staying where. Someone who's staying there tomorrow, next week might not be staying there because people get jobs, people go back to the rural areas. It is really quite a very, very difficult area to police. And the cluster, Honorable Chairperson, is having a very, very long-term plan, which is going to take many years especially with human settlement as well as other departments. And yes, most of the plans are reactive. So we are reacting to the crime because it's quite very much difficult to come with a proactive plan that can be sustained. The next question by Honorable Mlebazi on the crime intelligence was found wanting. General Ma Ngobo is here, Honorable Chairperson. With your permission, may you please respond to that.
Thank you, John. Can you thank
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Yeah, on this one, I can agree. We found wanting. I can admit to that, Honorable Member. I cannot dispute that. Yeah, and also, we reacted very late, and it's now that we are recruiting resources. We have started recruiting, and they said it's a reaction situation that we have found ourselves now. We are not proactive on that. I must admit, but now we are in Philippi East. We are recruiting people around that area. And we'll be getting more information with that exercise. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
I think there's follow-up questions from that response, but when we deal with the program, we can go there, right? General?
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. On the illegal liquor outlets, why are we not squashing them? Honorable Chairperson, these illegal liquor outlets, they range from where a person would sell about 5 beers to where there is a big liquor outlet. And I know that the police are raiding these shebeens on a regular basis, but they've been closed down. Tomorrow this person is operating again because it is a way of life, it's a way of survival, which while we are dealing with them, they keep on coming back, Honorable Chairperson, while other ones might close permanently, other ones mushroom. And it is an indication of the social economic conditions where this shebeens is a way of life of people, of trying to put bread on the table. On the vulnerable people stopping at intersection, what are we doing and what sparked these killings? These two questions, Honorable Chairperson, may General Jula respond to them.
Thank you, General Motiba. General Jula.
Honorable Chair, the people that are stopping at intersections, these are the tendencies that we pick up as we analyze the patterns and trends during our daily crime analysis meetings. And as soon as we become aware that there is a specific method of operation which is being used by specific groups in specific areas, we then refocus our attention and we step up visibility in those particular areas. But as may be agreed, that geographical approach that we use is going to have a shortcoming until we have effectively combined it with a targeted approach, which is going to target specific perpetrators of specific crimes, and we take them out of circulation in the particular areas. Thank you. Thank you. The other one, what sparked this particular attack? Well, this is an attack which, if one judges it from the first incident this month, which happened on the 12th of September at 10 past 12, here it is seemingly, it is clearly a vigilante activity where members of the community took the law into their own hands and set alight 3 people, and those people died. We know this because we then arrested the suspects, which were the members of the community, for the setting alight of those 3 bodies. So that is what sparked it. Then after that, then there was that other incident where now another 7 people were also going to be attacked. We cannot preempt what the
outcome of the investigations are going to be, but all indications are that even the other, this the second attack of the seven criminals, or what they believed were the criminals, was a vigilante attack. And then it was then followed by the killing of the 11 members of the public, which you believe was a retaliation from the side of the criminals. Thank you. Honorable Chairperson, I think that an area which we're going to work on very much hard, and the Minister is holding an engagement this morning in that particular area. The CPF is very much weak. Because if a person look at Marikana, there are areas which are almost like Marikana, but there are no killings because the CPF and community involvement is very much strong. And an area that we are going to concentrate on is reviving the CPFs and looking at other. Honorable Chairperson, this the aircon is not doing me good, and I'm gonna play if it can be switched on and off because I'm catching the flu. So we're going to work very much hard, Honorable Chairperson, to make sure that we revive, especially the CPF, and then we work with the leaders there, especially the local leaders. On the questions from Honorable Ramatakana, the role of the Nyanga cluster, what is the profile telling us, known leaders, and that the plan is reactive. General Jula will respond to both questions with your permission, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you.
I'll come back to
follow up. Let's just first take the first round back.
Thank you, Chair. The cluster has conducted a number of operations in that area, in the Marikana area. In May itself, this year, there were two operations which were the cluster operations. And in July, there were seven operations which were also the cluster operations. Also in August, there was one operation. And in September, there's been one operation so far. So that is the role which the cluster has played in that particular area. Thank you, Chair.
And the next question, General Jula, on what is the profile telling us of that particular area? Was there any profile made and that the plan that has been presented is reactive in nature? Okay, can you, with the Chairperson's permission, respond to those questions?
Well, the area has been profiled. The plan that we have presented, it is not going to be reactive in nature because it is a plan that we are going to sustain for at least the next 3 months reviewable. And it is a plan that is going to be ensuring that there are operations that are targeting every single informal settlement in that area, looking for any item which can be used in the commission of crime or which is suspected to be used in the commission of crime. We are going to be looking at rounding up all the wanted, all the known persons, and every criminal-related activities in that area. We are hoping that even if it can seem to be reactive for now, in the long term, it is going to be proactive in terms of removing a number of the criminals and cleaning up that area. And we are also hoping that it is going to be proactive because we are also going to be strengthening command and control, and we are also going to be ensuring that the additional members that we are going to be deploying there to further capacitate that station will make it possible that even though certain areas are not accessible due to the infrastructure, there is sufficient backup which is ensured on the members so that they are safe and they have confidence as they move to different spots in that particular area. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. The next question is from Honorable Mula. On the business robberies, are there any police patrols? Are there cameras, especially in Symphony Street? With your permission, Honorable Chairperson, can General Jula respond to both questions?
Yes, Honorable Chair, there are patrols. That area is subdivided into sectors. However, what we are further doing now into the sectors, we are further identifying the specific hotspots in the sectors. And with this zoning system that we are now putting in place, we want to make sure that we zoom into the particular areas that are problematic. And there are cameras, and we keep on in our partnerships with the business community, reminding the shop owners that these cameras must always be serviced, and they are always made available to us so that they can be downloaded, so that we can monitor criminal activities in the area. So the video footages are available, and we are making use of them. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
No, I'll come back. No, it's not so really. Okay,
no, let's, okay. We've got a lot of hands. So let's just do the round and then we'll go back. Thanks.
Honorable Chairperson, this Marikana is not the only area that this police station is policing. There are also other areas as well. And the police station cannot have what I would call saturation patrols on their own. There is a need for the cluster and the province to assist. Because if you are going to put about 100 cops in Marikana, they will not be visible because of the congestion of the houses or the informal settlement. And that is where it is very much important that the cluster and the province assist, with General Jula F. alluded to. We want to agree with the Honorable Mtongo that the geographical nature of Marikana is making policing very much difficult. We wholeheartedly agree with that. In terms of the researcher, Honorable Chairperson, saying that good police officers are being redeployed out of the area and the bad cops are being brought in. There are police members that are being redeployed for one reason or the other. If someone is promoted, he has outgrown his rank and so forth, this member would obviously be taken to where he has applied for. But it is not at a large scale. It's very, very individual members that are being promoted that leave the area. And in terms of the type of cops that we are having there, the main problem, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, is the numbers. We don't have enough members, especially to penetrate this area from the police station itself. We need that regularly the cluster and the province come in to assist. The police station on its own, you'd find that there's only one van in that particular area with about two members, and they will not make remarkable impact except to attend to complaints. But in terms of targeted patrols, it's very much difficult for the station to do that. The police respond times whether information we are providing to the committee is correct or not. Honorable Chairperson, we're giving the committee the average, and there is information that we can provide per station. We would look at the average reaction time across the whole police stations, almost 100, more than 1,000 police stations. So, General Jula, I think if you can respond in terms of the response times, how are we performing in that particular station there?
Honorable Chair, in terms of the average response times, we are doing well in that particular area, the Marikana itself. However, as I indicated earlier on, what makes it a bit of a challenge to attend, let me say, as General Motiba has already alluded, that the main activity in a situation like that is to attend complaints. It then becomes reactive because in order to move into an era like that, you must always get a backup. You can't, as a single vehicle, even attempt to move into such areas. And then now vehicles now have to move in something like a convoy so that there is a backup in a situation like that, because there are no roads. You can only access that area by foot patrols, through foot patrols, and then you must have vehicles parked off at a particular spot and provide some members that will be guarding those vehicles. And you walk into this area that is very dark using a torch because there is no electricity to find the particular spot or the particular victim who needs assistance. So then the reaction time per complaint is going to be affected negatively. And it's an area that can only improve if we put more resources and we sort out the issues of infrastructure, Honorable Chair.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. The questions from Honorable Mbele, the six members shortage at the station and the perception that the station is understaffed, General Makgato will respond to that. And if General Makgato can also touch on the fixed establishment as well, because there's a question down that will be coming in that way. Thanks, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you.
Okay, the Philippi police station, it is a kind of category C1, which has to be at a maximum of 280. Currently, it is below in terms of what the allocation of the police station, and I agree with what the acting national commissioner is saying. But unfortunately, it's not only the almost all the police stations are resourced at below their power. So that is one of the biggest challenges that we are facing. And if you remember what the provincial commissioner has presented at 149 actual person and six vacancies, it is still below what is supposed to be, so that we are agreeing.
Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. 40 additional constables. The question was, are all these from the academy, or are they going to be redeployments from elsewhere? General Jula, Honorable Chairperson, may respond to that.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. These will be from the academy, so we are not getting them from other stations. Thank you very much.
Questions from Honorable Collard Barnard. Is it vigilantism or is it gang warfare? I think General Julife responded to that it is vigilantism. On the 40 new graduates, what are you going to do with them? That was the question. And the next question was, explain the race. Did it result in the shutting down of the shebeens? I've explained this one, that shebeens are being shut and then they reopen. The lifestyle audits, is there any lifestyle audits? Explain intelligence-led policy. General Jula will respond to these questions, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. When new members are received, there is an induction program that we put in place. We orientate them about what lies ahead of them. And when it comes to a point when the members need to then be deployed, we always pair the less experienced members with the experienced members. That is how we ensure that there is continuity, that they also gather more experience from those that are already aware of what is happening in any particular area. So that is what we are going to be doing when we get to the new constables. And the other question, the question of the lifestyle audits and police collusions,
in that particular police station, yes, we are getting these complaints. We are getting some indications that the members that are in this police station, and not only this police station, could be in collusion with the criminals. And we are doing something about this, in that we are always trying to find some other ways of understanding which specific members are involved or are in collusion with the criminals, so that we can then ensure that these members are subjected to the processes in terms of the corruption activities, and a unit which is within the Hawks that can actually investigate such matters to ensure that these members are brought to book for their activities. But it is something that is going on. It is something that we keep on hearing about. It is something that we are very concerned about. But we are also hoping that with the decision that we have made to strengthen the command and control, it will possibly also reduce the number of such tendencies and temptations on the part of our members. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. The questions from Honorable Groenewald, area is not big enough, police involvement in crime, and that the police are afraid of going into the area. Honorable Chairperson, the area is very much unique in terms of the infrastructural problems, socioeconomic factors, and we cannot apply the same type of policy that you would apply in the city. It is just not possible because of the infrastructure, the lack of roads, proper roads to enter that particular area. So while it is not big, it is having special challenges of its own that we really plead that the committee understand in terms of the challenges. It's not a normal area, Honorable Chairperson. And the police are surely not afraid of entering the area. In terms of attending to complaints, we are always almost every day there. But the problem is when there must be targeted patrols, large-scale operations, the police station would need to be supported by the cluster as well as the province, which is not happening at the rate at which we are happy. Not happy, Honorable Chairperson, because the cluster is also having priorities in other police stations area. We'd want to see daily operations by the cluster and the station, and unfortunately it is not possible, but we insist that there must be regular operations. The 153 illegal outlets, Honorable Chairperson, these outlets will go up, will go down, they are never static. Some of them have been closed down, some of them the legal owners, the illegal owners move out. This is an estimation, and it is very much difficult to say with certainty how many illegal outlets are there. And it's very much difficult to police them, because you close it today, tomorrow it is up and running. We have, with your permission, Honorable Chairperson, responded to all the questions. Thank you.
Right, thank you very much. Members, yes, I will allow a further round, but just for clearing up and further information, because some of the generic issues, for instance, CI and detective services, we can deal with when we go to those programs, because a lot of the issues are generic, and also is, you know, it's a good case study, you know, so I think let's deal with that then, but I mean, for specific questions, let's deal with it now. Honorable Mulabatsi.
Yeah, thanks, Chairperson. My about the patrolling, which is so difficult. Why don't you use horses? By next one, I have another
only
one.
Anyone. Honorable Ramakani.
Chair, with respect, the matter of Marikana, in my view, is fairly serious. We were told that the minister is going to Marikana today, and that General Jula and someone else must leave early to go to Marikana. What we have heard here, in my view, is going to actually put the minister into trouble. Because you are saying you are not going to be able to do any disruptions policing in Marikana because of the challenge of the environmental affairs. So the minister is going to say, I'm sending the police here, I'm going to do this one, but practically it's not going to happen. This is what I'm getting. Now, the question I asked about the gangs and the profile has not been answered. The question I was asking, Chair, is that what is the gangs? You mentioned General Wele. Wele is in jail, but there's another Wele. You haven't spoken about that. The question I'm asking, are we seeing here initiations of a serious gang in Marikana with the mass killings, which we are not able to respond to? Now, with respect, I haven't heard that response about it. What is it that's going to happen about it? I hear there are lots of words. I ask, why is it not shut down on this place? This place is not as big as Khayelitsha is. So are you saying, General, you can't do it because you are too scared to go into that area? You need to go through that area with Nyalo. You can't walk in there, foot by foot, combing that area in terms of disruption, disrupting that area in terms of bringing order. Is that what we are getting? So what is the minister going to say? What's the value of what the minister is going to say there? So my point here, Chair, is I know we're rushing for time, but I just get fairly worried. I mean, I've made some notes, and the minister is going to have Imbizo there. What's the result of that Imbizo in terms of what we're going to be able to do? We're able to shut down the gang in TE. There was a shutdown in TE in some particular area. Why can't it happen in Marikana? You are losing trust as the police. Communities, I mean, I was on a phone call over the weekend with the commissioner about the police, the community taking over the police station and trying to get the CPF to intervene to stop it happening, because otherwise we'd have another problem that is now police-driven. Unless we do something that community can see with their eyes, which is fairly public and robust and hefty, you're going to continue to suffer this. Now, the city is calling for the police, the army, to come in there because the police are unable to do it. This morning, we are listening to a plan here, explanation. I'm going to leave it there, Chair, but I'm just frustrated that I just think that the minister is going to be set in the ledge. I can say that he's going to say we're going to clamp down. I don't hear plan of clamping down, unless it's a secret. If it's a secret, I'll accept that. And I'm one of the persons who supports the police quite well, and because I understand what the police are going through. But I also want to take something that it does not cut the ice and accept that as a reason. There is no reason that the police, South African Police Service, can't shut down Marikana and do a fine combing in that particular area as an operation. There's no reason that it can't happen. But let me leave it there, Chair, and I know my frustration. But I haven't had number of... but I'll leave it. Maybe there's a secret response to those questions. But I just think we are looking, staring in the barrel of a gun.
Right. Any other members?
No, thanks, Chairperson. No, Chairperson, before I actually ask this, I think it would be better for one to actually request the acting national commissioner to retract that members of the community, they are fairly weak. When listening to these community members, police leadership, many leadership must sit back and actually do some reflections. Because in my own, when I was listening, people decided to conduct patrols because of lack of confidence in our police service work that they are doing in that particular area. Now, and then criminals are targeting now those specific members for trying to actually quell the situation down. Now, for acting national commissioner to say, don't, because they are, I don't think that will be actually then precisely correct. In fact, it can actually fuel the flames of antagonism between police and community. Let's sit back and reflect. Now, I don't know, Chairperson, if then it will be possible for us to, as a committee, to meet with specialized unit of the Western units of the Western Cape, so that we can actually then measure their strength and then be able to persuade them to move into that area, because the information shared by that person from that community over the radio, seemingly these people come from somewhere and are imposing themselves, and according to what then I heard, that forcing people to eat raw meat, do that, rape their women, and all that, these things, in fact, if they are true, what Sakina was talking about, to me, is such a very, because it means those are known faces. Those are known faces by community. Now, it means there is something that this committee owes that particular community over that side, Chairperson. Maybe if we can meet with the specialized units, so that then we can then be able to actually make a special request, because even the MEC for this particular province, is mentioning various things, like reservists that were cut down and all these things, and he's saying this is impacting on the strength of members on the ground. Now, so that maybe we can then try to intervene. Because to me, I can actually smell the rat of certain senior people somewhere, as Honorable Ramatakana, who are actually fueling the pot. Just like the case in KZN, those murders taking place in KZN, you will say, I have said it. I can actually see, I was there. I was part of the people who was fighting in the trenches of war in that particular province. Police being at the forefront. And then even that officer who ended up being made a scapegoat, who was then termed the prime evil, who was fueling the flames of war in that particular province. If war is fueled by some members of police, it becomes so difficult to deal with it.
Right, thank you, Member. Honourable Bailey. Members, our time is really, we are making everywhere this hour and a half, and we still have got a long way to go today. Thank you.
Yeah, no, I'll be very quick, Chair. Thank you very much to the generals for the reply to my question. So the very clear and simple point that comes out of that is that, at least in this particular station, the SAPs are operating at half the operational capacity that the station should have realistically. Given that the THRR indication is 280 and they're sitting at 139 right now. And I think that's the bare facts that are reflected across the country, which explains why we have such difficulty with tackling and containing crime. But my question flowing from that, Chair, is looking at reservists as a force multiplier then a key pillar in the way forward? Because you would assume that given the budget constraints of getting full-time permanent officers, then you want to maximize on the opportunity of other other opportunities, be it reservists, be it community patrollers. I hear the point about strengthening the partnership with the CPF. That's one way to go. But are we looking at all the possible options for force multipliers, in particular given the terrain and the fact that you need foot work and foot patrol for the most part? Thank you.
Thank you. Honourable Kurabana.
Yeah, mine really is short, Chair. You referred to cameras Is there a SAPS war room where the camera feeds are monitored 24/7? Because I'm fearing not. Because there was reference to downloading camera feed from various shops. So it sounds reactive, not proactive. And General Juna referred to the anti-corruption unit in the Hawks. Have they been called in? Or is just was that just a vague reference to the fact that they exist?
Thank you. Honourable Groenewald, anything from your side?
I'll save your time, Chairperson.
Right. Yeah, maybe from my side, and before I give final responses, I mean, I think the thing that is really put by the members on the table, it's a serious issue. I mean, this incident was reported internationally. If we look at September, I think we're talking about 20-plus murders, 28.
23.
Yeah, 23. So that is very, very serious. And that means there must be an extraordinary intervention. And I think that's what we haven't heard this morning. I, General Acting National Commissioner, you come from management intervention. I haven't heard MI this morning. Because if more than 20 people are killed in one precinct, it means the cavalry must come in. You must bring resources like we recommended in the case of Cleveland's case and assist. Because we can't have that 27, 28 citizens of our country are killed like that. And, you know, we kind of business as usual. So I think in your final responses, and I think that's the takeaway maybe from this session, is the committee asks for urgency. Urgency, it should be a priority, and you will have to go back and review your current strategy. That's the only way. Because we must get the confidence of the people on the ground in that community. That's critical. We can't allow a situation, because that brings the whole question up, do we've got a two-tier policing system in South Africa? We can't have, in some communities, or in urban communities, we can bring in the cavalry, but in other informal communities or rural communities, we say, sorry, we can't. So we must really move away from that, I think, risk that we have a two-tier system. Over to you, General.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. The questions from Honorable Mlebatsi on the use of horses to patrol, General Jula, with your permission, will respond to that.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. We will explore this option. But it needs to be remembered that when this informal settlement came up in 2014, people it was a land invasion type of an occupation. So when people started building their shacks, they built them and so close to each other that it is all even going to be difficult for the horses to patrol any other areas than the areas in which yourself and myself are able to walk. Maybe it could assist, Honorable Chair, if the members of this committee and yourself could also pay a visit to this area so that you can see how close to each other these shacks have been built. So now it would mean that a horse would sort of try to go like this. And then during the night, it is going to have limitations as well. However, it is an option that we are going to explore, but it will have its own limitations in as far as the horses are concerned. And the disruptive operations, Honorable Ramatlakane, are underway. The disruptive operations have started already. There are already a number of successes that have been achieved. These disruptive operations are going to be sustained for 3 months, and they are going to be reviewable after 3 months. So that is going on already. It is basically members that are on foot there. We are looking into every possible house where the criminals could be harbored. And the question of the profile of the area and the gangs, as Honorable Ramatlakane is already aware, one twin is already arrested. We are hot on the heels of the other one that is outstanding, and the other members of the same gang. So there is a team that is working around the clock at the moment, trying to find the rest of the members that were led by this duo. The SAPS war room, yes, there is an SAPS war room at the provincial level. That is where we download
the video footages and also the information that we're getting from the surveillance camera. So this is being done by a specialized team of detectives. The anti-corruption, are we bringing them in? Yes, we are referring cases to the anti-corruption that are being opened in this police station and other police stations for their specialized investigation. Thank you so much, Honorable Chair.
Thank you,
Honorable Chairperson, on especially the saturation patrols and that on the extraordinary nature of the plan, General Masemola will, with your permission, shed some light on that, Chairperson.
And thank you, Honorable Chairperson and members. With regard to the plans, of course, we are mindful, as we are aware that, yes, we at this forum we have to give everything, but of course, we are mindful, of course, that you do have media in the house and everything we say sometimes end up on the papers. So the details of what we are going to do when, that Honorable Chair, we sometimes give it. But I agree with you that let's hear what the community of Marikana will say after some time. So let's wait and see how they will respond. But what we are going to do, yes, we are going to do quite a lot of operations in the area. And I'm sure General Villa did say that we are bringing extra personnel from national. Not that we are excluding the province. We're still going to mobilize a lot from the province. So we are going to have quite a lot of operations in that area with immediate effect. And yes, they might not be sustainable because of cost. But while we are busy with this intervention, then we'll look at what sustenance from the province can we put in place so that when national withdraw, they can run smoothly. But we definitely going to live in that area. Thanks, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much for that,
Honorable Chairperson, lastly, I would request, with your permission, management intervention also to come in terms of the research agenda. Because South Africa is having the formal settlements, informal settlement, urban, rural, and so forth. And I know management intervention have worked on is working on a research agenda, and I'll ask General Cruiser to expatiate on that.
Thank you. General Cruiser.
Thanks, Honorable Chair and members. On a research agenda, priority 8, exploration of policing concept of dwellings, informal settlement, and blocks of flats, e.g. in the Ubrau. The members have found that it's a challenge around that. So General Dr. Zulu, we have started with the research, we're collecting data around that to develop, as part of our policing model, a concept of policing to deal with those sort of areas. Because we can't use conventional methods, which is in our present plan today. So we're busy working on that in terms of those issues itself. But as General Masemola, we have to keep the pot on the lid in the meanwhile with a short-term plan in terms of spending, but there should also be a medium-term plan in terms of a concept of policing for that areas, which must work hand-in-hand with the stabilization process itself.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. We have responded, I think, to all the questions.
Well, thank you very much. I think we take note of the presentation and the further input. I think also at the National Commission, if you can also take note of our input. It's an urgency that we need to...
It's an urgent matter that should be dealt with as priority, and also the invite to visit. We'll see if it's possible, maybe on Thursday afternoon, for the committee to go to the area and also see for ourselves what is the situation. So thank you very much. Right, thank you very much. We will excuse then the gentleman who's going to be involved in Bizu with the minister. We will then return to our main agenda. Colleagues. Colleagues, we dealt yesterday, as I've indicated, with program 1 and 2. This morning we're going to continue. We're going to receive the briefings with regard to the rest of the programs, 3, 4, and 5. We'll take all together. And of course, then we will take the questions and concerns from the members. Maybe just the one issue. Yes, thank you, General Motiba, for your apology. But I think it's quite important to note that the committee is concerned about the Auditor General's report. I think we've indicated that yesterday and also conveyed that to your colleagues. And if you evaluate the report of the Auditor General in terms of the Department of Police, there is regression. Now, it's very important for the Portfolio Committee on Police that the South African Police Service must have, hopefully in the near future, clean audit, the performance management issues should be sorted out. But currently, if you look at the key controls of the South African Police Service at leadership level, there is 4 yellows, 1 green, and 1 purple. And part of the yellows is effective leadership oversight responsibility, effective HR management and policies and procedures. So it's quite critical that the accounting officer must take the lead, because at the end of the day, the Auditor General, in its evaluation of department, they take note of the tone of the top. So it's quite critical the accounting officer must lead by example. And I mean, the tabling of the annual report and leading the proceedings at the annual report is the responsibility of the accounting officer. Although General Kruse did well yesterday, it's for future references is non-negotiable. I mean, we know with other meetings you've got other priorities, but the annual report is one of the most important events of the year. And unless the South African Police Service leadership as a collective move forward and take note of these concerns from the committee or the general, we're not going to turn the situation around. So I just wanted to make that in passing. Members, if there's any issues flowing from yesterday that you want to pose to the acting national commissioner, is now the opportunity, but also as part of our discussions going forward. Maybe there was one issue that was also raised yesterday, I think by Honourable Kalabana, the question of the Section 45 appointments that was made. Yes, yes.
I think we left it because it was directed at the acting commissioner. It was about the Regulation 45 promotions. The Auditor General says, and through their investigations, that 83 SAPS members have been promoted without any selection process at all. And these are up, and they detail the numbers, to Lieutenant General, to Major General, to Brigadier. How on earth could such a thing happen? And why did it happen? And, you know, why was it done? How is it done? What's happened to SAPS regulations? It just sounds the most extraordinary claim they made.
Yeah, maybe just to add to that, if you look at the annual report, I mean, there was one promotion of Lieutenant General, 21 of Major Generals, and 39 of Brigadiers. Now, if we take cognizance of the National Development Plan that indicates that promotions must be on a merit basis, people must be competing for posts, and if we look at the leadership problems we've picked up as a committee, looking at stations, even clusters, where there's huge problems with leadership, and in yesterday's slide that was shown by General Rabi, there was acknowledgement by SAPS management that the first line of defense, including top management, your divisional commissioner, station commissioner, cluster commissioners, failed the test. Now the question is, if you continue with this Section 45 on such a scale, one can maybe argue in an extraordinary case of merit, that the National Commissioner must have the prerogative to appoint a person, one or two. But if you've got such a huge number, it begs the question, what then about progression, merit, and also ensuring that the best candidate lead that specific station or cluster? Can we maybe start with that?
Honourable Chairperson, firstly, I don't want to dodge the question, but these appointments were made. I was only appointed on the 1st of June this year, and these appointments were made in the past financial year. But the motivation that was brought to our attention, not in respect of all of them, was that some of the posts were very much there to be filled as a matter of urgency. In some of the posts were upgraded. This were, for instance, a cluster commander a post was at the brigadier level, that the post was upgraded to Major General, and the acting National Commissioner then decided to confirm the person who was already in the post. And some of the promotions, Honorable Chairperson, were urgent in nature, and the delay in the filling of the post would have defeated the purpose in terms of not filling the post as a matter of urgency. But like I'm saying, that these posts were done in the past financial year, and General Patan was acting at that time, and these are some of the reasons that were given, Honorable Chairperson.
So you ceased that practice? Because I think from the committee side, I mean, we will have to have a discussion with the executive authority, but I mean, that is maybe part of the problem we have currently. That in terms of matching and mixing and alignment, we're going to have problems if this practice continues as it's been done on this scale. But let's get the other members, Honorable Karabana, yeah, and then Honorable Tlongu, and Honorable Molabatsi, Honorable Ramatlakane.
Chair, I think if we may ask through you, ask for a full list of the promotions and ask for a full explanation of why those people were promoted. You know, you're going to end up with a problem with the unions, because if someone's bounced in, no interviews done, probably not may or may not have the expertise, nobody knows because there were no interviews done, other people who perhaps had earned that post have been overlooked. So I think it needs a full investigation, and I think we need a full written response from the SAPS.
Let's take the other members before I give General Mutiba opportunity to respond. Honourable Mushlongi.
No, Chairperson, I wanted to find out an explicit kind of a response to say, you know, from the pool of the national commissioners, you starting with the national commissioner and the deputies, are the decisions taken collectively focused on what needs to be achieved, or it becomes a one-man show, which at the end of the day, it will be the question to say, no, since now General Patane is gone, we can now openly say, this mistake was done by Patane, we disown it. I am raising that, Chairperson, because the information at my disposal is, currently there is a move to saturate crime intelligence with people for other purposes other than fighting crime. And even only if we can just allow this, noting the political condition of our country. And I will refer back to the question that I posed yesterday, to say if we can have a judge, judges are very reserved people. Normally they don't want to be conflicted on matters of public discourse. But when a judge comes out loud and clear, saying that if you get foreign governments taking action about money laundering, etc., of crimes taking place in South Africa, yet law enforcement agencies of the country are remaining numb. Then the judge says, is there a rule of law in the country? Now, this judge, I join him. I really join him. Because I still ask myself, am I living in a criminal state? Because of the things that are happening. And I join also the counterintelligence at General Zim, when he had to put his head on the block to say, this was done illegally. How many times are we going to actually then have leaders of police service, of South African police service, cleaning their hands when we know? But we cannot actually brief the lawmakers to say, here is the rod. This man is actually then putting the rod in our own uniform. No, Chairperson, I cannot actually take collective responsibility of things that seek to defeat the ends of justice in the manner the way it is. Actually, because these things are actually continuously happening, and this kind of instability at that level is just deliberate, if having its own political masters who want to escape imprisonment when they leave positions of power, leaving dead bodies at the law enforcement agencies. We are not going to lie low and say that let us inherit a dead force for the future, where our kids will never have peace in their own country. No, I'm not going to just keep quiet about this. Thanks.
Honourable Mulubachi, thank you, Honourable.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. Can I proceed?
Yeah, please, thank you.
Thanks. Honorable Chairperson, yes, we will provide written response and the motivation in respect of each and every one of the appointments. In terms of the Honorable Klongo, the collective decision, and we are not disowning the decision that was taken, Honorable Chairperson. In terms of Section 45, unfortunately, it is the National Commissioner who take the decision. So if, for instance, General Cruiser want the Section 45, the law does not allow it. It say the National Commissioner or the acting National Commissioner. So in that regard, it is not a collective decision. It is the decision of the National Commissioner. And it is the National Commissioner who must defend that, that decision. And this is exactly what we're going to do when we give written response in terms of that. In terms of the SAPO protest, Honorable Chairperson.
General, just maybe one issue. On that practice, is it continuing?
It is continue, Honorable Chairperson, but on a very limited scale.
What's limited? And what since, I mean, you know that you've got the information. Since your appointment, what is the numbers and the ranks?
Honorable Chairperson is mostly at officer's level, from, I think, the rank of Lieutenant Colonel until the rank of Major General. So, with the... we will also, in our written response, mention those cases as well, Honorable Chairperson.
No, because I think, once again, you know, I think Honorable Ramadlakane's proposal sounds good. But I think we want to caution, because, I mean, we asked yesterday the question to General Cruiser. If you must make an evaluation of the current, what is the current state of leadership at police and cluster stations? And he said about 60% in the country is maybe sufficient or satisfactory. And that's our concern. When we as a committee go on our oversight visits and we interact with some of the cluster commanders and station commanders, it's quite clear there is a leadership problem. Even this, this case study of this morning, I mean, we don't know the skill levels of the relevant cluster commanders and station commanders. But that's our problem. And unless there's an objective methodology to appoint people in terms of progression, SAPS in terms of skills experience, we're going to have a continuation of the current leadership crisis at station and cluster level. It's not going to vanish. And that's our concern as a committee, because the community and our voters, they come to us. They phone us at night, over weekends. They mail us, they fax us about the problems they experience. So the dilemma is, if that practice is continuing, and again at the levels you're indicating, it's a huge concern to the committee. And we will really have to look at it. Honorable Klong.
No, Chairperson. Chairperson, really, as a committee, as an oversight, as members who took an oath of office, to uphold the constitution of this country and protect it and supervise it, not for ourselves, but for the future of our own children. Allow even one person, because anybody who is actually touted to the position of power and authority and command, illegally and wrongly, the purpose is just When we got a briefing from the head of Hawks in KZN, it is that no material was stolen from their offices, but information. Who they met abroad and all that. It means you have got criminals within the system. Now, Chairperson, if we've got parachuted people like this and we allow it, even one, General is saying that, no, but at a limited scale, then we put the dagger at the back of dedicated officers for them to, because it means of you, you as officers will continue to actually then hold memorial services of you, because we allow criminals to be parachuted into the ranks they don't even deserve to do dirty work for certain political people who are actually then taking the country down. I don't want to live in Rwanda. Then Jefferson, I think Jefferson, here, if the acting commissioner has got powers, what is it that makes you not to be able to stop this thing? Not to happen at a limited scale. To stop it. If decisions are taken by the commissioner, what makes you not to be able to stop it? Thanks, sir.
Right, thank you, members. Response, General?
Honourable Chairperson, on the SAPU protest at the 10111, where we are, or Honourable Chairperson, in to cut a long story short, SAPU want all the level fives at the 10111 centre to be upgraded to level seven. And we indicated to them that we don't have sufficient funds for that, and that we are going to convert all the posts into Police Act. And SAPO is not in agreement, and we went to the SSBC, we went to CCMA. As matters stand, SAPO has declared a strike, they suspended it, declared it, now they want to march. Fact of the matter, Honourable Chairperson, is that we don't have sufficient funds to upgrade these members to level seven, and we're busy engaging both with unions that we convert the post into Police Act, which is level five. In terms of the Lidwawa investigation, Honourable Chairperson, that investigation was concluded, and Major General Mkushan was removed from Crime Intelligence, and Major General Ngobo was appointed. There was allegations against General Mkushani about the theft of money, the slush fund, and the person who is alleged to have been party to that and who has got information is not cooperating with the investigation. And the previous commander of General Mkushani, when he was in Gauteng, has informed the investigation that he's not aware of any money that has been stolen, slash fund money. So it is now the weight of the commander against the weight of the secretary. And that investigation, as we speak, Honorable Chairperson, has stalled because of the lack of cooperation of that particular person. Lastly, in terms of the vetting, which was also part of the investigation, the new acting is dealing with the vetting of the personnel within crime intelligence and within the broad subs management. Crime intelligence was given 3 months to finalize the process. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you, members. We will take a 10-minute tea break, and then we'll come back. Of course, then we will get the briefings that are standing from SAPS 3, 4, and 5, and then we'll go to questions. Thank you. 10 minutes. Thank you, members. Thank you, SAPS.
Thanks, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. Honourable Chairperson, can I just get clarity? Do we take program 3 first, or do we take all of them 3, 4, and 5?
We take all the programs, all the presentations.
Thanks, Honourable Chairperson. General Rabi will do the presentation with your permission.
Honourable Chair and members of the committee, good morning. Maybe you asked that we introduce the people that are relevant to the different programs. Program 3 is, first of all, General Hamatswele. He is representing General Nkomo, the Divisional Commissioner for Detective Service. They are part of Program 3. And we also have Lieutenant General Matakata. I think he's just outside. She's the acting head of the Hawks. That is also part of Program 3. And then we also have General Mboka. He's also supposed to be here. He is for...
Just a moment, I've got a question from Honorable Mulabatsi.
Sorry, you said that he is representing who? Where is he or she? Where is she?
Honorable Chairperson, General Nkomo is on leave. But she's also not feeling well.
I have a problem with this of people being sent to represent other people when we want answers from them. I have a problem. There's still a problem with that. And this people who approve leaves also must look at, is it a convenient time to approve a leave now or what? You know, I have a serious problem, Chair. Thanks.
Yeah, because I think the underperformance of detective services has been a problem for a long time. If you look at the AG's report, there's also again issues that we will touch on later. So we need the responsible person to be here. That's quite critical.
Honourable Chair, continuing with the presentation, those are the three primary stakeholders in Program 3. I will introduce the others when we get to Programs 4 and 5. As far as the overall performance of the environment is concerned, Chair, just to be noted that this is the specific environment where we made the amendment, where the one indicator that was incorrectly indicated as achieved has been adjusted. So you will note in your presentations, it would indicate that 27, it's now down to 26 that has been achieved, 7 not achieved, and then 1 that is that we did not continue to measure throughout the financial year due to the reasons that I will explain. And overall, we have a 76% achievement of targets within Program 3. If we look at the previous four financial years, in 2013-14, we had a 70% achievement of targets. That went down to 60% in the 2014-15 financial year, up to 61% in 2015-16, and then up to 76% in 16-17. That is the previous financial year. But also, then, as indicated there, there's one indicator that we did not continue to measure throughout the specific financial year. Honourable Chair, members, I think as far as the detective service environment is concerned, the first couple of indicators talks directly to this specific environment, and overall the performance is, the problem with performance in this environment is primarily with the detection rate. That means your crime, that investigation of crime, the referrals to court, etc. That is primarily where the problem lies in this specific environment. Detection rate for serious crime, the first performance indicator, the target was set at 38% with the raw detail as it is represented there. At the end of the day, we achieved a 36.22% detection rate for serious crime. That is 1.78 percentage points below the set targets. The reasons that has been provided by the relevant environment is that most of these crimes were committed with firearms under circumstances where it was difficult for witnesses and victims to identify the perpetrators, and then also due to the violent and traumatic nature of these crimes, victims were unable to assist and contribute during the investigation process. We also have specific strategies that has been implemented to address the areas of underperformance, but that will be dealt in detail when we get to the end of the sub-program. The second indicator relates to the percentage of trial-ready case dockets for serious crime. The target was set at 64%. The actual performance achieved at the end of the financial year is 84.21%, and that is 20.21% better than the set target. The reason for the deviation or the better-than-anticipated performance is the focused investigation to finalize cases for court, and then also during interventions conducted in service training was provided in respect of data integrity and the updating of our SAP source systems. There was also a quick response relating to the generation of expert reports, section 212 statements that are available on the ICBMS system for easy retrieval by the investigating officers that are responsible for the investigation of crime. The next performance indicator is the conviction rate for serious crime. I think the members will now be familiar with the fact that we, when it comes to the investigation of crime, we are measuring three primary indicators. It's detection rate, trial ready, and conviction rate. And that is then basically repeated for the different categories of crime. So as far as the conviction rate for serious crime is concerned, our target was set at 88%. We've achieved the actual performance at 88.64%. That is 0.64 percentage points better than the set target. And the reason for the improved performance as far as that is concerned is the effective and efficient intervention capability by detective management teams to identify poor performing investigative units and then intervene where necessary, and the continuous improvement of investigation and the statement taking process, effective monthly case flow management and meeting with the Department of Justice and constitution development and enhanced stakeholder relations, and then also assistance that has been provided from prosecutors to ensure effective investigations and ultimately prosecutions. The next indicator is we are starting now with a new category of crime. This is contact crime, but the same indicators are repeated. The first one is our detection rate for contact crime. The planned target was set at 55%. Unfortunately, we did not achieve the target. The actual performance at the end of the financial year was 52.28%. That is 2.72 percentage points below the set target. And the reasons that we've provided, because the contact crime is a subcategory of serious crime, it is the same reasons that has been provided in terms of the assistance that is required from witnesses and victims of the specific crime that proved to be problematic and is proved to be problematic in the sense that it complicates the investigation process. The next indicator is still with contact crime. The percentage of trial ready case dockets for contact crime, our set target was at 64%. At the end of the financial year, we've achieved 83.63%. That is 19.63 percentage points better than the target. And the reasons for the deviation is the focused investigation, specifically on your court cases to make sure that they are properly investigated and prepared for trial. The interventions that has been conducted that focused on in-service training and also the data integrity and updating of the system that was identified as part of the initial problem in terms of all the problem that we've experienced with data integrity itself. Also, the fact that we have some of our expert reports, the Section 212 statements that are now available on the ICBMS system that enable us to retrieve this faster than the reaction time that we had in the past. The next indicator is the last one within the contact crime category, conviction rate. It was set at 80% for contact crime. We've achieved 80.94% at the end of the financial year. That is 0.94 percentage point better than the set target. And the same reasons are affected there as well, because as I indicated, your contact crime is a subcategory of serious crime. So the interventions and the corrective measures that were implemented will be the same than what I previously raised as far as the serious crime is concerned. Honorable Chair, moving to the crimes dependent on police action, these are crimes that are identified during police operations and police activities. Our detection rate for these type of crimes is set at 99.6%. We currently have actual performance at the end of the financial year of 99.75%, and that is 0.15 percentage points better than the set target. The reasons for the deviation or the improved performance is our intensified multidisciplinary approach in terms of our planned operations, as well as weekly station and cluster operations where they were conducted, improvement of data capturing on our systems, and then daily, weekly, and monthly system audits that were conducted at the respective levels. The trial ready case dockets for crimes dependent on police action, the target was set at 57%. We've achieved 77.46% at the end of the financial year. which is 20.46% better than the set target, and then the same reasons are being provided because the same principles are applying in preparing our dockets for the court system. The conviction rate for crimes dependent on police action for detection, our target was set at 97.20%. We've achieved 97.68%. That is 0.48 percentage points better than the set targets. And then the comments that relates to the deviations are similar to the ones that I already alluded to when it comes to the conviction rate on serious crime. Then performance indicator detection rate for crimes against women 18 years and above, that is specifically focusing on the five contact crimes, murder, attempted murder, sexual offences, common assault and assault GBH. As far as that is concerned, we did not achieve the target. Our target was set at 75% with the raw figures that have been quoted there. At the end of the financial year, we achieved 72.86%, that is 2.14 percentage points below the target. The main reasons that contributed to the fact that we did not achieve the target, in reference to the training of commanders and members during national provincial detective intervention on case dockets, the management of data integrity that is problematic, and the continuous monitoring and updating of systems, increased operation to trace arrest on day-to-day arrest, increased quality and quantity of statements that were taken from forensic social workers. It also needs to be mentioned, Chair, that most of these crimes that we're just dealing or referring to now are being investigated by the FCS units. Moving to the next indicator, still within the detective service environment, the percentage of trial-ready case dockets for crimes against women 18 years and above, the trial-ready rate was set at 64%. At the end of the financial year, we achieved 82.11%, and that is 18.11 percentage points better than the set targets, and the reasons for the deviations that are listed there is similar to the ones that I've already quoted. Coming to the conviction rate for crimes against women 18 years and above, our target was set at 82.8%. We have achieved 84.03% at the end of the financial year, which is 1.23 percentage point better than the set targets. And then the reasons for the deviation, I've already alluded to that. It is similar to the ones that we've dealt with under serious crime, because the crimes that we monitor in this environment is also a serious crime and part of the contact crime category. So the interventions will be similar and the comments will be similar as far as that is concerned. Detection rate for crimes against children. Unfortunately, as far as the detection rate is concerned, this is the only category where we managed to achieve our target on the detection rate, and this is for the children under the age of 18. It's the same five crimes that I've referred to: murder, attempted murder, sexual offences, common assault and assault GBH. Our target that we set was 69.5%. We've achieved at the end of the year 69.91%. That is 0.41% better than the set target. And then the deviations, the reason for the deviations, that is also similar to what I've already explained. So then we are... the percentage trial in case dockets for crimes against children, the target was set at 61%. We've achieved 78.51% at the end of the financial year, which is 17.51 percentage points better than the set target, and with similar explanations or comments that relate to the serious crime category. Moving to the conviction rate for crimes against children under 18 years, murder, attempted murder, sexual offences, assault, GBH, and common. The target was set at 76.1%. At the end of the financial year, we achieved 87%. That is 10.9 percentage points better than the set target, with the reasons that are stated that are similar. So, Jay, in essence, before I move to the next category, I need to finalize this one first. As far as violent conduct during public protest is concerned, that is the last category within the detective service environment that we monitor the detection rate, conviction rate, and trial ready. On this one, 47% was our target. We are currently only monitoring public violence, as far as violent conduct during public protests are concerned. The target was set at 47%. We did not achieve the target. We ended up 2.45 percentage points below the set target at 44.55%. And the reason for not achieving the target here is that these incidents are usually committed in large groups and under circumstances which makes it difficult to identify and arrest your perpetrators. In some incidents, we have to deal with spontaneous and simultaneous incidents that relates to public protests and associated violence. Poor quality of video footage to identify the suspects and perpetrators as far as these incidents are concerned, and then also the fact that members of the public are reluctant to come forward and assist with investigations due to the fact that they fear retaliation. And moving to the indicator percentage of trial heavy case dockets for criminal and violent conduct, we set the target at 70% of the incidents that are court ready to be prepared for court in terms of the trial ready indicator. We ended at 84.07%, which is 14.07% better than the set target. And the reasons for the deviation is similar to the others where we spoke about trial ready or preparing case dockets for court. The conviction rate for criminal and violent conduct in public protest, this is the only indicator where, as far as conviction rate is concerned, where we did not achieve the target. As far as all the other categories and subcategories are concerned, we did achieve the conviction rate except for the public violence. There our target was set at 71%. We only ended at 60.56%. That is 10.44 percentage points below the targets. And the reason for not achieving our target in this regard is the fact that witnesses are being intimidated to prevent them from giving evidence in court. Investigation of these cases are a long and tedious process and most instances dependent on obtaining forensic evidence that includes your video footage and the associated analysis thereof. Large group of suspects are arrested and prima facie evidence must be obtained against each and every one of the accused that are being arrested or have been arrested. And then lastly, the lack of interest in the court process and sympathetic attitude of witnesses towards the accused that is also contributing to the current problem that we do experience. As far as the non-achievement of targets are concerned, Chair, just to provide a summary, as indicated, the areas where we did not achieve the target includes your detection rate for the different categories of crime that are being listed there. The one that needs to be added there that we changed is also then as far as the crimes against women is concerned. So detection rate is currently problematic over all categories of crime. And then lastly, as far as the conviction rate is concerned, we've highlighted the fact that we did not achieve the target when it comes to violent conduct during public protest. The strategies that has been implemented by the respective environments to address the areas of underperformance is the thorough and responsive investigation of all crimes that has been reported. Then to ensure that we have an optimal utilization of investigative aids and experts to support or to provide support in identified cases. To optimize our crime intelligence and information in support of reactive policing in order to increase our detection rate. To enhance integrated data integrity and processes on our subsystems to provide more accurate and timely information. A customer-centric approach to the investigation of crime through communication and marketing in order to increase the detection rate. And also improve cooperation with partners within the criminal justice system and other identified stakeholders and the targeted deployment of detective resources to address areas of concern. That portion is the detective service, what we refer to as the general detectives. We are now moving to the next sub-program, that is the DPCI. Now, in DPCI...
Because they must do it themselves. Not SAPS. I mean, we actually needed an additional report because one newspaper reported this morning on page 2 that the DPCI didn't submit the annual report to Parliament. They didn't. So it's quite vital that DPCI must present that. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Unfortunately, I didn't read that article. But I think because of, in terms of the annual report, our report must come into the SAPS report.
as such. So I'm not sure where is that coming from. That we didn't submit.
But if you can just go ahead with your presentation.
Thank you. For the DPCI in the past financial year, in terms of the performance indicator, that is looking at the percentage of trial-ready case dockets for fraud and corruption by individuals within the JCPS cluster, the target was 53% to maintain 53%. The actual performance is 79.47%, with the actual cases referred to. And then the deviation is 26.47%. And
just a moment, General, Honorable Tumula.
I don't have the presentation.
It's the same one. It's the same one. Yeah. It's included. It's included.
Okay.
Right, thank you very much. General, you can go ahead. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. And as I indicated, the deviation in terms of percentage we achieved is 26.47%. And in terms of the comments as the translation of the cases and where we have the process of a prosecutor guided investigation principle, and therefore the monthly monitoring and evaluation of the performance contributed to that. And the second performance indicator speaks to the percentage of trial-ready case dockets for serious commercial crime-related charges. And here as well, the the performance indicator speaks to the detection rate of serious commercial crime-related charges, and the planned target was to maintain 80%. The actual performance is 95.37%, and the deviation in terms of percentage is 15.37%. And here as well, it speaks to the prioritization of cases and the prosecutor guided investigation with the special commercial crimes units that are located with APA and the monthly monitoring and evaluation of this performance between the two environments. And the third performance indicator speaks to the percentage of trial-ready case dockets for serious commercial crime-related charges. The planned target is 53%. The actual performance is 66.43%. Deviation in terms of percentage is 13.43%. We have a proper screening and quality assurance process of case dockets to ensure that they are trial-ready, and the principle of investigating to arrest and not arresting to investigate is assisting cases. The next performance indicator speaks to the percentage of registered serious organized crime project investigations successfully closed. I'm not supposed to be terminated, but because they are raising the current financial year, as was advised in the portfolio committee, that we won't use the term terminated, that this is because of the last financial year report. The planned target here is 43% of registered projects successfully terminated, and the actual percentage was 61.61%, and with a deviation of 8.61%. And this also refers to that we have a multidisciplinary approach in terms of investigation with projects, and therefore the work relationship that is existing between DPCI and external role players, and effective utilization of the governance committees that are in existence to ensure that there's proper and quality investigation in existence. And then the next performance indicator speaks to the number of serious commercial crime-related trial-ready case dockets where officials are involved, including procurement, fraud, and corruption. And here, with the planned target is 30 trial-ready case dockets for the year, and we did have an actual performance of those 30 trial-ready case dockets for the year. The next performance is indicator speaks to the value of amounts involved in procurement fraud and corruption-related cases. The plan target here is 376 million of asset restraint. And here we have, and it is during this 2015-16 process, we had agreed that this was not a DPCI performance indicator. It's located within the NPA asset forfeiture unit, but it found itself within this space because we are working within the ACTT structure with the AFU, but we had agreed that we cannot give further explanations on this because it's not really located within the DPCI NPA indicator. And then the next performance indicator is the detection rate for cybercrime-related cases, where the planned target was 28% and the actual performance was 44.92%, with a deviation of 16.92%. And the comment in terms of the deviation was that the successful identification and investigation of associated threats and having referred these cases to court assisted greatly in overachieving this performance indicator. The next performance indicators on the ICE.
Thank you, John Montecarta.
Dylan, you can go ahead.
Okay, thank you. The next indicators talks to the Interpol responsibility that was at the time reflected under Program 3 Detective Service. You will note that in the next or the current financial year that has been moved to crime intelligence, but for the previous year was still here. Now, the percentage of cross-border operations conducted in relation to requests received, the target that we set that we will attend to 100% of the requests that we received. At the end of the financial year, a total of 35 requests were received for cross-border operations, and all 35 incidents or requests were attended to. The percentage of arrest of identified transnational crime suspects that has been facilitated, the target was set that we will attend to 100% of the requests that has been received. 100% was achieved. A total of 341 requests was received for the arrest of identified transnational crime suspects. The percentage of Interpol files that have been finalized, the target was set to finalize 70% of the files that we have on hand. At the end of the financial year, a total of 71% of those files were finalized. That is a total of 1,408 files, of which 1,051 were finalized. And that is 1.1 percentage point better than the set target, and that is primarily ascribed to the fact that better quality control measures were implemented to ensure that those files were attended to and finalized within the set timelines. We are now moving into the forensic services environment. The first indicator in that environment, that is Mr. Walker's environment. The first one is the percentage of original previous conviction reports generated. Our target was set that 95% of the conviction reports must be generated within 15 calendar days. We did achieve the target with the numbers that are quoted there at the end of the day achieving 97.89%, which is 2.89 percentage points better than the set target. And that is attributed to the criminal record and crime scene management component at national level that implemented the 24-hour shift service to generate conviction reports and also improved performance that was further sustained through daily planning, monitoring, and management of workload in those respective environments. The next indicator is the percentage of routine case exhibits that has been finalized. Our target was set at 93% of the routine case exhibits processed within 28 working days. Unfortunately, this target was not achieved. At the end of the financial year, we had an achievement rate of 72.09% with the numbers that are quoted there. That is 20.91 percentage points lower than the target. The reason for the non-achievement is the dual focus of the Forensic Science Laboratory on both entries received and eradication of the backlog, and that had a direct impact on the performance against the set standards for that environment. the indicator percentage of non-routine case exhibits finalized. Here, the target was set at 76% of non-routine case exhibit entries to be processed within 75 working days. Our actual performance at the end of the year was 71.84%, which is 4.16 percentage points below the set target. It is notable that the actual performance improved from 64.94% in 2015-16 and then to 71.84% in 2016-17, but unfortunately we did not achieve the target that we set for 76%. The majority of the non-routine case exhibits were processed within the biology and chemistry sections of the forensic science laboratory. It also, the restructuring and streamlining of processes as well as the enlistment of interns in strategic areas assisted in the processing of more routine cases within the turnaround time. The drug analysis cases were moved and shared between different regional laboratories to assist with the processing and finalization of cases with set turnaround time. So although the noted increase that we see there from 64.94% to 71.84%, unfortunately, we did not achieve the target of 76%, but we note a significant improvement. The next target or indicator is the percentage of DNA intelligence case exhibits finalized. 65% of the cases to be processed within 63 working days. At the end of the year, we achieved 87.62% with the detail as is quoted there, and that is 22.62 percentage points better than the target, and contributing to the fact is the business restructuring and streamlining of processes within the biology section, as well as the enlistment of interns within our various disciplines in that environment that resulted in a turnaround, improved turnaround times when it comes to the percentage of DNA intelligence case exhibits that has been processed. The percentage reduction exceeds the prescribed time frame of 28 working days. The target has been set that we should not have a backlog of more than 10% within this environment. At the end of the year, the backlog was 1.36%, that is 8.64% better than the set target. And the reasons that contributed to that is a dual focus on new exhibits that have been received, as well as addressing the backlog area, and that resulted in the identification of a dedicated capacity to deal specifically with backlog cases that has been identified. Then management also introduced an exercise weekly, monthly, and quarterly performance monitoring and review to ensure that the backlog is being addressed. And as I already indicated, the implementation of a flexi-hour system and the allocation of overtime that positively impacted on the production in these various sections of the forensic science laboratory. The percentage of ballistic intelligence cases finalized, the target was set at 95% intelligence case exhibits finalized within 28 working days. Our actual achievement at the end of the day was 99.12%. That is 4.12 percentage points better than the set target. And the main reason contributing to that is the upgrades that has been done on the IBIS system, as well as the allocation and utilization of overtime in that environment that resulted in improved processing of results. The strategies to overcome the areas of underperformance, the two areas on the chair that has been identified, it talks to the percentage of routine case exhibits finalized as well as the non-routine cases as I indicated. The strategies implemented is that the component or the division responsible demonstrate ongoing commitment to service excellence, then optimally utilizing existing reference index and crime investigation technologies that are available. They've also introduced, as I highlighted, the flexi-hour system to optimize the utilization of personnel and available equipment at the capability, and then also completing the reference index samples to be done automatically on the FSL admin system. Honorable Chair, that concludes Program 3. I will now move to Program 4, which I just need to mention that somebody said to me yesterday that I'm drinking too much water when I did my presentation yesterday. There's a water shortage in Cape Town. I must scale down, so I'm only going to take a sip after the event program. Then moving to Program 4, Crime Intelligence. Crime Intelligence Program 4 is General Gorka, Zeno Nwobo is responsible for Program 4 Crime Intelligence. I would say that environment, there's only 8 performance indicators that are being measured, so this should take a little bit faster than the previous 3. They achieved 6 of the indicators. That gives us a 75% success rate. 2 of the indicators were not achieved. At the end of the financial year, if we look at the 4-year comparison, in the previous years we have achieved 100%. It's now only in the last financial year that 25% of the targets in that environment or 2 indicators we did not achieve the target. First of all, the number of inquiries that have been dealt with within this environment, a target was set to deal with 14,017 inquiries to be dealt with. At the end of the financial year, a total of 51,204 inquiries were dealt within this environment. That gives us an increase of 31,187. The main reason for the noted increase in the number of inquiries, basically the increase that we noted in community protests, the protest action against institutions of higher education and TRIU and property-related crime, and these collectively placed a higher demand on the intelligence environment to provide the respective environments with the necessary reports and the result of inquiries. Moving to the number of tactical operations to be conducted, the target that we set for this environment was 21,024. A total of 38,523 tactical operations were conducted throughout the financial year. That is 17,499 more than the set target. The main reason for the increase in this specific environment is the specific focus that was given to illegal possession of firearms and ammunition, as well as the reasons that I've noted in the previous indicator where we noted an increase in the number of community protests and protest action at institutions of higher learning that required or placed an additional demand on this specific environment to generate to deal with tactical operations. The number of network operations conducted, our target was set at 759. 855 network operations were conducted throughout the financial year. That is 96 more in number than the planned target. And the reason for that is an increase in the number of TRIU and property-related crimes that placed a higher demand on intelligence environment to generate network operations to address the specific identified crime threat, and then also the intensification of protest action at higher institutions of higher learning, as well as increase in violent and syndicate crimes that was identified throughout the country. The first indicator in this environment, Honourable Chair and members, that we did not achieve the target is the vetting of personnel. The target was set that 60% of the identified group needs to be vetted throughout the financial year. The actual performance was we only vetted 45% of the targeted group. That is a total of 1,111 out of 2,448. And that resulted in us not achieving the target, and it's actually, the actual result is 14.62 percentage points below the target. The main reasons contributing to this non-achievement is the high personnel turnover of qualified betting investigators and polygraph examiners. Then also the conversion from the manual betting system to the e-betting system. Blockages within the process flow, the investigations versus evaluations that needs to be conducted, and then there was also a lack of prioritization of targeted investigations. The strategy that's been implemented by the environment is that there will be a revamped strategy to be developed to address the vetting, streamlining of the process, the vetting process itself, as well as measures to enhance the capacity throughout the Crime Intelligence Division to deal with the vetting of personnel. They will also focus on targeted vetting, focusing on vetting of prioritized environments that has been implemented in the current financial year, where they now have identified specific group or targeted groups to be prioritized and vetted. The vetting, as far as the reasons, there's additional information on slide 126 that talks to the deviation. The vetting investigations are primarily coordinated at provincial and head office capacities. Concluded investigations are then directed to the head office for the polygraph examination, evaluation and adjudication by the security vetting panel. Now, these functions that are listed there are centralized currently at head office, and problem is that we have inadequate capacity at polygraph and evaluation that causes a bottleneck in the process that we explained there. And then also the development and implementation of the e-vetting system that happened during October 2016. The corrective measures that have been implemented as far as that is concerned is the implementation of the vetting revamp strategy that focuses on the following prioritized areas. The Ministry of Police, all SMS members of SAPS, all personnel that are currently deployed at OR Tambo International Airport, and then also up to the level of colonel at the Division of Crime Intelligence. A vetting action plan will be also be developed and presented to the Portfolio Committee on Police when required. To address the current backlog experience with the regard to the evaluation, polygraph examination and paneling of vetting applications, the following actions will be undertaken. The evaluation capacity was also enhanced by redirecting 18 members, your vetting field workers, that resulted in us having a total capacity of 51 members that are available to address the current backlog that has been identified and explained in the previous slide. And then the capacity of 8 members at the polygraph section that will be enhanced with 3 additional members to assist in that environment. And then lastly, the vetting panel that will now convene 4 times a week to address the backlog. The last indicator that talks to the percentage of ICT security assessments finalized. I'm going to say the target was that we had to finalize 100% of the assessments. We actually missed one at the end of the financial year. We achieved 99.97%. That is 3,294 were done, and there was only one request that was received late in March that could not be finalized before the end of the financial year, resulting in us missing the one and ending up 0.03 percentage point below the target. Now, the future performance that relates to this specific indicator will be managed through a quality assurance schedule and performance monitoring by the relevant section heads to ensure that whatever requests that are being received, that they are dealt with promptly and finalized within the set time frames. Number of physical security assessments finalized. Our target was set at 142. At the end of the financial year, we dealt with 414. That is 272 better than the set target, and the reason for that is an increased demand for assessments that has been referred to crime intelligence with regard to the security posture of crime intelligence facilities. That is the noted increase then, or that resulted in the noted increase of 272. The number of tactical and operational intelligence products that are generated in terms of profiles, intelligence reports, etc. This is an indicator that's made up of a bulk of reports, which I will highlight. The target was set in terms of the profiles analysis reports, the communication analysis report, the interception reports, and the cluster crime threat analysis report to deal with 166,197. At the end of the financial year, as far as the 5 subcategories are concerned, we dealt with 278,187 tactical and operational intelligence products. That is 111,990 more than the target that we set for the financial year. And the main reasons contributing to that is what I've already mentioned, the noted increase in community protest, your university, the actions, protest actions at universities, the increase in violent and syndicate crime, the trio crimes that has been identified as problematic, etc. All of those new threats and placed additional demands on the intelligence environment. The strategic intelligence reports that need to be generated to address the NICOC priorities. Our target is to provide NICOC with 22 strategic intelligence reports. at the end of the year, we did 38 intelligence reports. That is 16 more than what we planned for. And the reason for that is increases in the threats to the authority of the state, threats to territorial integrity of the republic, threats to well-being and safety of South Africans, and threats to the economy. That also placed a higher demand on intelligence products to attend to the NICOC, identified NICOC priorities. So that concludes Program 4. I will now move to Program 5, which is the last one in our annual report. As far as... let me introduce Jill Sitoli. Lieutenant General Sitoli, he is the...
We don't know him.
Jill Sitoli represents Program 5, Protection and Security Services. In Angoche, this program is quite straightforward. There are 7 indicators that we monitor. All 7 of the indicators, we did achieve the targets. Compared to the previous 4 financial years, you will note that there was an 83% achievement in 13-14. It remained 83% in the next year, an increase to 100% in 2015-16, and it's also currently standing on 100% achievement of the set targets. You will note that we basically, the indicators are repeated for the protection and security environment and then the presidential protection services. The first indicator talks to the percentage of protection provided to VIPs from a protection and security services environment for both security protection and security and presidential protection. The target is set at 100% incident protection provided, and that we should not have any breaches, security breaches, when it comes to the protection of VIPs. And in both environments, there were no breaches, and 100% protection has been provided. Moving to the next slide, this is also repeated for protection security as well as presidential protection. The percentage of protection provided at identified government installation and in identified VIP residences. Within PSS, we had no security breaches. 100% protection was provided. And within the presidential protection environment, there were also no security breaches, and 100% protection has been provided in that environment as well. The next indicator talks to the national key points. Within the PSS environment, protection and security environment, there is a total of 194 national key points to be evaluated. At the end of the financial year, we did achieve the evaluation of 194, so the target was achieved. And then when it comes to the national key points within the presidential protection environment, 100% of the national key points needs to be evaluated. And at the end of the day, the honourable members will note that our target was set at 12. During the financial year, we could only evaluate 10. The one was declassified. One of the 12 was declassified, and it's no longer a national key point. And the access to one of the residences was refused, so we could not do the evaluation as far as that is concerned. And then the last one only relates to protection and security services, the strategic installations that has been audited. The target was set that 50.8% of the identified strategic installations needs to be audited. That amounts to 129 out of the 254. That is exactly what we achieved, 50.8% at the end of the financial year, with 129 of the strategic installations that were audited. That brings me to the end of the said programs. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, members. That's the presentation. I will allow 5 questions for the first round. It will take us up to lunch to 1 o'clock, and then we'll take lunch, and after that we will continue. Right, the first few from my side, and then I'll go to Honorable Abatsi. Now, in terms of the Auditor General's report on page 329, some of the issues raised is the issue of leadership. The Auditor General says there's instability in the position of National Commissioner and vacancy identified as the National Commissioner level. Now, of course, National Commissioner, that's the duty of the executive authority, and we'll await that. But the Deputy National Commissioner position of crime detection on the level of Lieutenant General has been vacant for a long time. During the time of General Batlane, we urged him, I think in two reports, appoint. It didn't happen. And I see in terms of this one pager that was made available to the committee, it says appointment to be made by the National Commission of SAPS once appointed. So that will be the new gentleman coming. But the dilemma with that is it leads to a situation where the unsatisfactory performance, I'll come to that, in that environment is putting SAPS on the back foot. Now, if you read that simultaneously with the AG's internal control mechanisms, under performance management, proper record keeping gets a red, daily and monthly controls is a red, popular, accurate, complete financial is a red. But if you go to the performance information for program 3, detective services, usefulness is a red, reliability is a red. And if you go to the different categories, and hopefully the colleagues will refer to that in the AG's report, it raises serious questions about the performance information, the availability of supporting documentation. It's, so in detective services and DPCI. And that's a matter that can only be rectified by permanent leadership in that environment. So, acting National Commissioner, you must give an indication. I mean, what steps will you take in Program 3? I mean, the acting General Nkomo is not here, he's not well, that's fine, but say, for instance, the new National Commissioner will be only appointed in the next 2 or 3 months. I mean, still there's a lot of time lapse to address those issues of reliability and usefulness of your information. So what are you going to do? Secondly, we raised this question yesterday also with the AG. You now knew that chair, but how many times did you personally meet with the AG's team on the new, well, on the finalization of the current audit, but also in the final process, not in terms of delegating it to other colleagues, but how many times did you personally meet with the AG? If you can just indicate that to us, because that's quite critical going forward. So if we can just get a sense of that. Then in terms of CI, maybe I think it's slide, the priorities, in terms of slide, yeah, slide 126. Now it's indicated in terms of the revamp strategy of vetting, there's certain categories, Ministry of Police, all SMS members of SAPS, and then crime intelligence onto all colonels. But again, it's a very static approach, because if I'm a foreign entity, I will then recruit all the majors and captains, because I know they're not going to be part of the vetting process. So we need a much more holistic approach in the crime intelligence environment, ensuring that we ensure that all the risk areas are covered. And maybe a further question to John Torbo is, what we picked up in our oversight in some of the provinces, and I think you also alluded to this morning when we spoke about Marikana, is the lack of informants but sources. I mean, I think in Chatsworth's case, there was only one registered source at that station, a big, big area. Is there, from your side, if you can assure the committee, proactive steps to ensure that there's sufficient sources and informants? I don't want to even go to the university situation, these issues in Limpopo province, and that's all been well publicized. But the outbreak of public order, it's well known in the community. There's community meetings. There's planning meetings. And then it erupts. And it's then reactive policing. So are you, you're also new in the position, but are you especially focusing on that, ensuring that that environment is attended? I think the previous acting person in that position told the committee crime intelligence is dead. I mean, there's no structure, head office, everybody sits at the head office. Are you dealing with those current lacunas to ensure that there's sufficient network operations, and also everything is covered to ensure that there's the necessary support. Honourable Mulabatsi.
Chairperson, point of order. Can we start this time from this side?
I'll grant that. No, it's fine. Yeah.
We're multi-party committee. Okay, let's start from this.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe the honourable colleague of mine will think what she's going to ask. Chairperson, I have three questions to ask. I want to start, Chairperson, with the detection the detectors. If I go to slide number 84, 85, and 86, and I just want to use that as an example, it is about the detection rate, it's about serious crimes, the trial-ready case dockets, and the conviction rate. Now, Chairperson, the figures doesn't make sense to me. For instance, if you look at the detection rate, it says 36.22%. Then it says 781,830 of 2.1 million. If you go to the trial-ready case dockets, it says 84.21%. Then it refers to 313,981 of 372,835. Now, that doesn't make sense to me, because on the detection rate there were 781,830. Now we're talking about trial-ready case dockets of 372,835. If you go to the conviction rate, it says 88.64%. It's 141,783 from 159,946. Now, if you go back to the figure of the 781,830 of the detection rate, because, I mean, it's a detection rate, those files go through the whole process to get trial ready for final conviction. Then the trial ready case dockets was only 40%. And the conviction rate only 18.1%. So can I get an explanation for those figures? Because on each case we have a different number. And with that, Chairperson, it means that we have a huge backlog. So can I get the figure of what is the backlog really, the figures? My second question, Chairperson, is on crime intelligence, on the vetting. If I look at that figure there, let me see, it's 125. I have it that all personnel in crime intelligence is supposed to be vetted, or else they can actually not work there. So it says percentage of employees vetted, it's 111 of 2448. It means we have 1337. Not vetted. So how can they work? So if I can get an explanation on that. And my last question, Chairperson, is on the Protection Security Services. Can we get an update on the protection of Dr. Dlamini Zuma, where she was not entitled to VIP protection? Has that been stopped? When was it stopped? And the previous in a previous meeting, we were promised that there was will be a thorough investigation. And is that investigation completed? And what were the findings of that investigation? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Krivel. Honourable Bailey.
Thank you, Chair. It's about four questions from me for this round. Two from Program 3 and two from Program 4. My first question in relation to Program 3, the Protective Services, is that on slide 84, it's quite a low detection rate, given that we're talking about serious crimes. And the question I wanted to ask relates to a new story I saw, I think it was, let me see, it's dated here as the 21st, that was Monday, about apparently new organized crime units that are being established initially in the Eastern Cape as a pilot, as a pilot project, but the idea is for a national rollout. Now, it's reported that these new units are not part of DPCI, and their mandate will be to investigate local organized crime syndicates, and there seems to be a bit of confusion as to the distinction between the mandates of the Hawks and the mandates of these organized crime units. But it also seems like parts of the rationale is that there are gaps existing that are not covered by the Hawks, but that SAPS also doesn't address adequately. So can I just ask, what is the rationale and just some clarity around these intended organized crime units, which would form part of Program 3? Is it about these low detection rates we're seeing with serious crimes? And what has been the gap that's existed that they are meant to fill, if that is the case? Second question, still on Program 3, is from slide 108. this figure of 30 trial-ready case dockets as they relate to cases where public officials are involved just seemed odd in terms of, it might have been a question that was asked when we got the APP report, I can't remember. But just, what is the rationale for the target number being 30? Because in any event, the number 30 seems quite low. If assuming that 30 is part of the 2,750 trial-ready case dockets for serious commercial crimes that are on page 106. So just what's the rationale for 30 as a figure, and it just seems really low for me. If you consider, you know, that we're talking three spheres of government across nine provinces, lots of departments, the idea that there's only 30, or 30 comes close to the total universe of procurement, elected fraud, and corruption, just doesn't, I mean, I'm sure just in SAPS alone, there's lots more than 30, never mind all departments across all spheres. So just some explanation of that. And then my two questions relating to Program 4 on the crime intelligence. The one bit of consistent feedback that I always get when I do station oversight visits from station management is that the support from and the capacity of crime intelligence at cluster level is inadequate or insufficient. And I mean, looking at the figure in the report here, it's 855 network operations are what's reported on, a massive drop from the figures we had in previous years, which were in the thousands. So that just doesn't seem to be anywhere near enough to make an impact in identifying and therefore informing intelligence-led operations that targets crime syndicates. The explanation for that seemingly very low number of network operations. And if I'm wrong that it's a low number, just an explanation as to how 855 network operations in 1 year would be adequate to cover the full landscape of organized criminal activity, which the SAPs don't seem to have a grip on anyway, because we see those categories rising. And then my last question, Chair, comes from page 229 of the published SAPS reports, where the first point relates to an operation where crime intelligence foiled an armed robbery in Zanin. Six suspects arrested, but amongst the equipment that was seized was two firearms, a hijacked vehicle, and a jamming device. Now, if I'm not mistaken, jamming devices are meant to be highly regulated, highly controlled, and very, very difficult to get one's hands on. So if crime syndicates are able to get their hands on jamming devices, we're looking at a very serious situation. And there have been rumors I've heard circulating that in some of the farm attacks, the groups who go on the farms and who conduct the attack have been caught on photographs with jamming devices, the idea being that then emergency calls can't go out. So what's the picture in the whole intelligence environment around the regulation, control, and tracking of jamming devices, and are these leaking out to crime syndicates in the way that firearms have been? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Kalabana.
Thank you, Chair. Slide 113. I think that's one of the ones which is quite shocking. I mean, it's your key responsibility, successful prosecution of offenders by investigating, gathering, and analyzing evidence. You had a target there of a 28-day turnaround of case exhibits, and it was down really 20.91% from what you wished and what you actually did. So we're back to the stage where we're blaming the forensic science labs and their backlogs. I don't know how many more millions have to be spent on these labs. Really, the backlog in the back, and it seems to me that since you moved Major General Shezi away from that environment, it's been an issue again. They fixed everything and now it seems to have collapsed again. So that's an issue. But it brings me to the catastrophe that the labs, the forensic chemistry labs, falling under the health department, are giving you, I believe. That falls under the health department, but of course, evidence bloods being poured down the drain. I'm sure you've all seen the reports. Blood alcohol exhibits taking 6 years to process, and now the person who's been in charge of them has been suspended. Are you looking at maybe facing mass actions of people challenging the court cases where under you they were found guilty of drunk driving, and now everything that's been done there seems to be in question? I mean, I've always believed that actually the SAP should deal with their own forensics. It shouldn't have to go through the health department, and now we've got this catastrophe, and I wish that had been looked at sooner, but I'm wanting to know how you're going to deal with that. Well, crime intelligence. Auditor General's not allowed to tell us anything, so there's nothing to ask. Something else that I was interested in that I possibly should have asked yesterday. The Section 45F retirements. Now, we saw that being used to give golden handshakes to a number of police members who were actually facing investigations and charges, criminal charges, all sorts, and they were suddenly shuttled off with a boosted pension. Has that process been stopped? Is it still ongoing? It tasted very bitter to hear that a number of these people that, in fact, everyone had been after were sent off to retire in luxury. It just seems that preferential treatment was being used, and I'm especially looking at Richard and Bluey, who I gather is going to retire next year. Is he going to get one of these fancy retirement packages? And it just seems to me that when you've got members who were injured on duty, and I've got a huge list, and I'm certainly dealing with, she's not here, I'm not sure what her portfolio is, but she deals with staff matters. Of so many who've taken a bullet, paralyzed, whatever, they should be receiving huge amounts from the Compensation Commission, which has collapsed. So there are people sitting. The one man said he had one banana to eat for 3 days. Others, their families have abandoned them. Other, hundreds of retired or boarded SAPS members are virtually starving to death. and I would ask that this is looked at as a priority. It's not right. You can't expect the guys to go out there and take a bullet for the country and then toss them aside like trash. It's not right. And then I'm sure you have your reasons, and I know, again, you've presented your report with no reference to what the Auditor General has claimed, and I don't think they're claims. I think we have to accept they're proven. But if you could look at the statements by the Auditor General and give explanations, you know, the evidence provided indicated only 55.9% trial-ready dockets, not the 83.85 you claim. And so it goes on through, I'm not going to read them all, you've got them all there in front of you, evidence for serious commercial crime, all of them. It seems your claims of success are far higher than the proven claims the Auditor General could pin down. And I think my final one for this round, slide 101. When it says one of your problems is that the witnesses are threatened and so they back off, why are you not protecting your witnesses? I'm currently dealing, and it actually falls under IPID and not the SAPS in this instance, but a person who has been threatened and been money extorted by SAPS members of this individual, and he has had no protection. They could have gone and pushed him under a bus at any time up till it's now the charges have been laid. But in this instance, if there is some strategy, I'm imagining that someone in the Philippine instance, is there really going to be a community member with the nerve to provide evidence against the gang laws? I don't think so, because they're scared of being killed. Is there a strategy to protect your witnesses? Otherwise, you might as well pack up and go home, because who's got the nerve to put their life on the line to stand in a courthouse and maybe take a bullet as they walk out the door?
Thank you. Thank you, Honourable Chairman. No, thank you. Thank you. Chairperson, on slide 84, I see the extinction rate there, the plan target to be just very, very low. 38%, and even the outcome is lower than the targeted outcome. What could be the reason of setting, because detection of cases, Chairperson, to me, is a backbone that brings trust to the community and brings faith and builds faith for community members to the police to say they have done a good job by arresting, and also then the processes will then take the cause leading to conviction. Now, if it is like this, if the planned target is low, far lower, 38%, far lower than even a quarter of it, then can that be a reason to say why it is the set standard for detection rate being set so low? What is it that is lacking that makes you convinced to say you must set your own target at the lowest so that you can drive a whole miss to reach the target? I am looking also at the question of further training of detectives. I thought maybe that your recommendations was going to carry to say, in order to be able to rise up to the level, these are the strategies that you are adopting in order to build capacity of detectives. I can understand with regards to the technological requirements that you are putting, but human resource development, because technology, you know, I was taught that it's not a gun that can fight. You can come with an automatic rifle. If I'm a well-trained person, I can take you down just using a very low caliber weapon, because you don't know, because it's not a gun that actually does it. It's a person behind the gun who actually then, look at. So even if you can have sophisticated gadgets, even only if the human element is not up to standard, I can tell you, we are not going to win war. I will keep on making special reference to Richmond violence and the redeployment of Brigadier Engelbrecht to a very complex matter of that violence, which was waged by Mr. Ngu, who was within prison's authorities, taking prisoners from the prison to go and kill people. But he didn't need these things that I'm getting here, that because witnesses are fearful, because these things were highly concealed, the programs. It tells you of a caliber of a detective. Brigadier Engelbrecht was. What is it that is lacking today in order for us to reach that level, so that we can produce as many of these Brigadier Engelbrecht and others? Otherwise, that detection rate, Chairperson, is the killer punch that will actually make the entire service completely illegitimate in the eyes of people. Then coming to page 102, 103. I think I've touched on the question of query training. Maybe, Chairperson, it will be important to sort that in the near future, once we are done with the reports of the previous years, that we are actually then appraised as to what is it that will be done in line with the good practice lessons that we learned from UK visit. Because without further training, we are not going to make this thing. Let me quickly then rise to the question of the hawks. If you go to page 109, the Morane Commission, the presentation before Morane Commission in KZN, indicated that these matters are driven largely by greed, which is informed by endemic corruption. And I guess it is the same thing almost throughout the country. Fraud and corruption, time to eat, leading to the chaos that you saw in the Eastern Cape Conference of the ANC. One faction destroying one another in the meeting because it's time to eat. And tying that to the special assignment program, which I will touch on later on, because I gave Gerard Clemenza. Fraud and corruption within land reform in KZN, nothing was done because it touched on leaders of the country. Now, if you, as a head of Hawks, you are giving this thing to say, you don't know whether NPA or you, because this thing says that. So which means that NPA will say Hawks, and you say, no, it's NPA. Are you in agreement with the judge to say, with these Guptas, who are all of a sudden running this country, almost looting everything to the bone because they shield even the family of the President of the Republic. Then, because these people actually then conduct money laundering, which benefits people who are in positions of power, money laundering becomes legal. It becomes illegal if it is done by Philips. It becomes legal if it is done by those, which makes the judge says, is there still a rule of law? I know, General, that you have been saying that, no, we are investigating this, maybe it will even come to the end of your term of your contract. We're investigating. Now, even only if there is evidence, because there is nothing to investigate. The journalists have done investigation for you. It's just to fetch these people, for them to answer, irrespective of whatever political pressure you will have. I am then saying, if you take this young boy, Makaka, he is clearing corruption in that region of Sisonke. Where is it gone? Corruption. Many people are just being wiped off from the surface of the earth. Corruption. At gunpoint. Now, are we not, General, going to end up having corruption, fraud and corruption being turned into a culture in this country because of these retreats by organs? I'm not necessarily saying that it's not a multidisciplinary action that is required, but I say this because as a head of specialized units, I believe all other units need to take a cue from you. If your hands are just held back like what General Clemenza did, when there was there's a prima facie evidence, even from your own members, particularly with that thing of Mr. Zulu, at Ungoye, when transactions are to be done in the Eastern Cape, now verified by the special assignment program yesterday, which I watched, that the land is being looted in order to benefit politicians, not those who voted politicians to power. In case that and that thing, General, I can tell you now, it will actually, and I doubt if the head of crime intelligence has never actually picked it up, that part of these conflicts is because people of KZN, then once they realize that law enforcement is not actually performing, they just say, sort the things on your own. Because they are just, those people are just warriors by birth.
Yeah.
Now, I am not condoning, but I'm just looking at this to say, if then law enforcement agencies are not actually picking up these people, because, is it because you are fearful that it touches on political powers that be? If so, can we kiss and say goodbye to the constitutional order of the country? Then lastly, to the crime intelligence, you are saying you are just concerned about vetting at OR International. But all key entry points seem to be affected. We have seen it in Messina. It was good what General Semenza Yunis did there. We know in Durban International what is it that is happening in terms of drug trafficking, using that port of entry, those port of entry, both the harbor and also the airport. Why only worried about OR? Is it because OR is in the eyes of the public in terms of that money that was taken away? Is there any concentrated planning to say we need actually then to bring about interception and ensure oiling of machinery in all points of entry, so that our intelligence units will then be able to actually then complement the work of each other in a much more professional and also honest and trustworthy manner. Why only picking up only OR International? Thank you.
Thank you, Member. Honourable Mula.
Thank you, Chairperson. And thank you for your presentation. In slide 99, I'm worried about the targets that are low and not achieved. It's 47% of target that you blame target, and 44% you didn't achieve this target. And in your comments, you say poor quality of video footage to identify suspect. Whose video footage that is poor? In slide 110, DPPI, your target again is 28. You did achieve it, but it is too low. Why can't you increase it? If the target is too low, which means you are relaxing, you are not working, because you are going to achieve it. 28% is too low. Why can't you say 50% or 57% so that you can work very hard? In slide 101, again, detective services, 71% target blank. Actual performance is 60.5%. Is not achieved again for conviction rate for criminal and violent conduct in public. In your comments, you are saying witnesses are intimidated to prevent them from giving evidence in court. Who intimidate those witnesses? Your second, you said large group of suspects are arrested and prima facie evidence must be taken against each and every excuse. Is it not the job of the detectives to do that if you are going to complain about that? In slide 125, crime intelligence. Honorable did ask this question, Boulevard, this of vetting. You said 60, plain target is 66% in crime intelligence. How can you claim 60% in crime intelligence? People must be vetted, you said 60%. Why you can't have a percent? Because crime intelligence is a critical department. Why are you saying 60%? And you don't achieve that 60%, it's only 45%. What I want to understand, are you General Ngobo the part of 1,337 people who are not vetted or what? Are you vetted or not? That's what I want to say. And when are these people going to be vetted and what are they doing now? Are they still working or are still the same like General Mukojane whose security clearance was last 2007? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Mula. Honorable Rafakani.
No, thank you, Honorable Chair. Quickly, to run through some of the questions, I think some of the questions already been asked, but I'm just going to add my voice to them. And I'm looking at the AG's report, page 225. And I'm looking at 225 to 26 and 27. If you look at the AG on 28, 29, 33, 34, 35, and 37, and 39, if you look at it, 41. If you look at all those comments of the AG, seems to be disagreeing with the assessment on the achievement target reached. Most of them, the AG is basically taking up an issue with your own report on targets, that what you say you have achieved is not backed by evidence. Now, evidence got to do with records and information. Now, while I know you are going to work out a detailed plan on it, General, I just want to understand, this is goes to both and including the DPCR. What do you have a problem with the record keeping? Accurate record keeping. Because the issue about evidence, you can only prove evidence with some record. You don't have record, you don't have evidence. So the reason, what is the reason that the AG, what you submit to the AG and what you write, is two worlds apart? Is it because of the record? And if it is because of the record, what is it that you're going to do to address this problem of the record keeping in order to be able to show evidence? Because otherwise, the question is going to be who do we believe? Do we believe the AG, or do we believe SEPS report, or are we in the middle? Somehow, that's why I'm asking this particular question. I'm summarizing the AG's question in that sense. Then there are a number of other questions that I just want to run through. The on page 93, you seem to be talking about the questions of the. Yesterday we spoke about this, which is one of the priority crime: women and children, inability to reach your target. Now I'm. Haven't heard to speak to what are you doing to be able, is it got to do with the bodies, the people that are doing the work that are able to do the proper detection? And that takes me to something like somewhere that's something in the Western Cape. For the last 9 months, I think the head of that unit has been in suspension. And as a result of that suspension, if you look at the LCDW case in terms of investigation, lots of bumbling. And the suspension, the people who with the capacity and the expertise get this hammering. And on the one hand, we're suffering in terms of the provisions of service. So now I'm asking this question, and I'm interested to know whether the Western Cape situation is different, has been addressed differently, because they contribute in terms of this particular crime. On one hand, the management, for no reason, suspend the head of those units and no finality happens. I want to know the problem of this. If it's a priority crime, I mean, for years now, the whole thing about focusing on this particular crime, with the capacity, with appropriate officials to be able to do this, what is it? Why is it that it's like it's a problem? And if you were to just ask you simple things, what more do you need to do in order to fix this? You have more than 100 years experience in this room as you sitting here collectively. What more do you want? Simple thing that you can do to fix this. Quickly, on the page 89, the whole thing about the conviction rate. Somehow, I don't know how we can do it, but we need to have a sense of carry over or carry through the offense that result into the whatever the positive conviction and the new cases that are coming on board. To those sense of seeing the actual target achievable, because you have this rollover effect of crime in terms of dealing with it. Somehow, if we could try and help us understand that, whether we are improving, whether we are dealing with the carry, is it just simply carry over effect that we are beginning to see results of the last 3 years or 4 years? Then on the I think page 101, 99 is dealt with. I'm going to skip it because I think there was a question about video footage is there. 101 question. The issue both of the DCI and the detective, that we have been concerned about the targets. If you can remember the discussion, that some of the targets are set low, and the defense of your self-defense said, but we're measuring this target based on what we have achieved in the previous year. So we don't want to increase the target, because if we increase the target, we're shooting ourselves on the foot. So they rather keep it with a little percentage upward. So I'm just trying to find out from you. Are you satisfied with the target that you are reaching because of the low target? And I was smiling when the DPC was talking about the target, and I said, most of the targets have been met or surpassed. Is it excellent work, or is it a low target? Or is it a low-hanging fruit, issues that are quickly achievable, and then we can tick the box? And then while the difficulty was not like the AG on the issue of cybercrime and the rest, he raised a difficult question there. What is the progress, King General, on the issue about discussion between yourself and Traeger? We were informed the last time by the previous head that there were progress. There were some discussion around the DCI becoming a program on its own, other than the vote. What are the progress that have been made in terms of that discussion? Or is there any discussion taking place, or the discussion ended with the General Clemenza when he reported about the progress that was being made?
Let me just say the intelligence, the crime intelligence, I think there seems to be overkill, except to say, unless some drastic capacity in the totality is addressed, is put onto the, we're going to end up in the problem that is going to, it will be always reactive. Because if you are having intelligence, if you are having communities, and if you are having footprint in terms of the intelligence, you'll be able to make things in the body and neutralize many of the problems that you have. The more you don't have that, of course, you want to react to it. It's always going to be a reaction. That issue, in the last 3 years, hypnosis, we've been talking about it. We've been talking about what is it that you're doing in terms of addressing this. We've been talking about focusing on the 1 year, it was a year of the detective, that we're going to do this because it's important for trust, and it's important to become, because people will begin to see results. But frankly, I don't know what is going to happen here, because if that works together with the detective, the detective will fall on the basis of the weaknesses that you have with the crime intelligence. That's the last part of this issue. I want to raise this question quickly. There was something, General, in your way you ended up. You said there was national key point that you were assessing, and then somehow you had there was a refusal. I think you used the word the refusal of entry or something like that. Now I was shock. I didn't know what you mean by refusal of entry in the national key point. What actually, maybe you can explain so that I can understand what you actually mean. If you're saying it's a refusal, it means it's in the hand of someone, and someone is refusing the entry. And does it meet the requirement of the national key point? So that maybe will help me to understand your. And then, no, thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Ramadakani. Honourable Malubachi.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, that includes it. And the first one from me, can we have an update on the break-in at CCI Meadowhill? My next one is on for the CI. The General Chiba, the last time we had an interaction with you, you made mention a challenge of seniors having to be vetted by juniors. Can you give us an update on that? My next one is for the protection services. There has been a number of break-ins in ministers' residence, like Minister Masuita, Minister Dodo, and others, including Parliament. Is your protection services up to the challenge? My last one, where do you draw the line when you allocate these cases to DPCI and to say these ones must go to DPCI? At first, I was under the impression that complicated and serious ones automatically goes to the Hawks. But at times I get very confused because I just see, you know, some smaller ones even going to DPCI. Can you tell me where do you draw the line to say these ones must go to DPCI, these ones must stay with that? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. Members, we will take now, if it's fine, a 40-minute break. 40 minutes, then we'll come back at 20 to 2. Hopefully there will be a lunch available outside. Also the, let's say, restrictions for Parliament in terms of budget, but let's return there 20 to 2. Thank you very much. Meeting is adjourned until then.
I'm going to go to the hospital.